Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers, locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
Now, XL Prime Time with Josie Hacker, Matt Hayes, and Leon Searcy on 1010XL.
Welcome in the noon hour. Thursday, hope it's going along good for all of you out there. OTA's underway. And the Jaguars wrapping up practice in just a little bit. Already hearing from Doug Marrone and Cam Robinson scheduled to talk afterwards, but that was canceled, so we'll talk a little bit about that. But the OTA is definitely one of our main topics. The NBA Finals, another one of our main topics, which we're going to dive into right now, because Game 3 goes the Toronto Raptors' way. They now take a 2-1 series lead over Golden State on a night that Steph Curry hit for 47 points, but it wasn't nearly enough. It had a little bit shades of James Harden and the Houston Rockets. He was taking all the shots. No one else was contributing, and in the end, it wasn't enough. So we're definitely going to dive into the NBA postseason a little bit today and have some fun on that. I think, Hacker, you picked Golden State. Leon and I were on Toronto's side. Matt, I can't remember. Where were you last night on Toronto or Golden State?
Like who I thought was going to win?
Yeah.
I thought Toronto would win.
Yeah, and so this is – at least it makes it interesting, and now I think we all know Kevin Durant and probably Klay Thompson are going to be in the lineup Game 4.
Well, Klay Thompson's definitely going to play Game 4. Klay Thompson was active last night. I was wondering – legitimately wondering if it was close with 5 minutes to go, if Steve Kerr would think about it, because why leave him active for no other reason?
Yeah.
But they didn't do it, obviously. Toronto drilled, like, 15 threes. I mean, they were shooting crazy, whether it was Danny Green, Kyle Lowry. It was a great night.
A lot of big
for the
shots.
Raptors. But it was a great night and a night that they had to win. If Toronto didn't win last night, they were not going to win another game in the series with no Klay Thompson and no Kevin Durant. So, yeah, it makes it very interesting. Golden State now finds themselves in a must-win tomorrow. That's why I almost guarantee Klay Thompson's going to play. Kevin Durant, more up in the air, I think, if they can save Durant until the following Monday for Game 5. But, yeah, Golden State needs to win tomorrow, or they're obviously in a considerable amount of trouble.
Leon, what did you think? Because this is looking a little bit better for your field bet.
Yes, it is. And, by the way, I like my wings extra crispy.
Oh, I don't think the Raptors are going to win another game in the series.
And my cigar, not Nicaragua, and Dominic.
Not another game, he said.
Yeah, I don't think they win another game in the series.
Who doesn't win another game in the series?
I don't think Toronto does.
Are you serious?
I am.
First of all, they should have won the last three.
Right. Mm-hmm. It should be
3-0 right now. Game two, if it wasn't for abysmal third quarter where they just got outshot, like 20-3 or something like that.
They shot 20-something percent from three, right.
Exactly. So, anyway, I mean.
Like saying if Toronto doesn't make 28 threes last night, Golden State should have won.
They made 17 threes.
Who made threes for Golden State in game two? Quinn Cook's out there burying threes. You kidding?
Iguodala made the shot to beat Toronto.
Right, and Iggy. That's what I'm saying. These guys are making threes.
Golden State last night got a picture of what they're going to look like after free agency. With no Klay Thompson and with no KD, that's what they're going to look like. With those two guys out of the lineup, they are not the dominant team that everybody used to be so afraid of anymore. Now, next year, this time, both of those guys are gone. Golden State would be lucky to be a three seed.
It was interesting. The shoe was on the other foot last night. Now Steph Curry fully understands some of what LeBron James went through in Cleveland. Mm. When you're the only guy. And, look, Draymond Green, feel free to step up and do something. DeMarcus Cousins, you're an all-star. Feel free to step up and do something.
They kept feeding Draymond the ball, and he could not hit. It was iron. It was glass. It was never net. And it really was an embarrassing shooting night for him. And it kind of illuminates that he is such an effort guy and such a guy defensively and transition that can do so much for you. But you're talking about, in most people's minds, one half of basketball is your ability to shoot. And he cannot, as a rule, with any regularity, shoot. And then DeMarcus Cousins, he's just not in shape, but at the same time, he did a lot for him in Game 2 and then just did zip last night, unfortunately for him.
I don't know what you guys thought. It wasn't Golden State's offense. Golden State, offensively, played well enough to win the game. They did not play a lick of defense. Half of those threes Toronto made, they were wide open. Yeah. Gasol, Siakam, when they wanted to get to the hole, they got to the hole every time. It should be a crime to have Pascal Siakam being defended by Jonas Jerebko. That should be
But what's so funny is that
you
is
should
as,
be disbarred from basketball.
But that is
thinking as, Jarebko can guard
but that's
Siakam.
That's what they got right now. Yeah. That's what they got.
Yeah, but that Klay Thompson wouldn't guard Siakam anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say even if
Durant.
You, yeah, even if you didn't have him in there, and obviously Durant is a bigger piece of this. Whenever you see the warts on a dominant team like the Warriors. Then, just like the argument has always been, can they win without KD, yada, yada, yada? They may still have that argument if Klay Thompson's healthy.
You know who would have guarded Siakam is Looney. People don't talk about Looney
yeah,
not being
Looney,
in there either.
Yeah, it was Looney with the collarbone and the ribs. So it's true. He had as much to do with this as anything, and Siakam is a guy that can step away. We've seen so many of these guys, both he and Gasol, for that matter, can get away from the basket and hit bigger shots, wing, around the arc, whatever the case may be. And so it makes it very tough. But Steph Curry, 47 points, which was 43% of his team's offense, and they throw the stat out there that the guys that have represented 43% or more of the team's points in the finals, they never win. That's LeBron, like we're talking about. We go back a couple years ago because he was the only thing. They didn't win. He scored like in the 50s and could not win. And then Jerry West is also one of those guys that's done that.
It's like we were watching Davidson all over again with Steph. Mm-hmm. And to me, the thing that stuck out last night, and it's more so along all these playoffs, is Steph's impact on this game is not going to be the championships he won at Golden State. It's how he has changed the way the league plays games now. It is now a three-point league now. You have to be able to shoot the ball. Everything revolves around your ability to get outside, hit shots from the outside, and everything is spread out like the international game now. And you got to have one guy that can dribble and penetrate and that can kick it out. If you got that and you got guys that can shoot, you can win big games. Toronto won because Danny Green was hitting threes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's as simple as that. And Golden State won the game before because Cook was hitting threes because Iggy hit a big three. It's not really the big name guys. It's you got to have guys around them that also can shoot the ball.
I don't disagree with you, Matt. Steph Curry, I think, has changed the game. But, I mean, Reggie Miller, Ray Allen, I mean, there's always been guys that have shot
not
the ball.
Not like him. Not like him.
Well,
man.
It's like we have
Reggie
seen
Miller.
And with Clay there, both of them, really.
The Splash Brothers.
Right.
But I just think we've seen what has happened, the evolution of Steph over, let's just say, a 5-year period, right? Because they played in four straight NBA finals trying to win their.
No, it's their fifth NBA finals.
Played in four straight trying to win their
fifth.
And so that would be four rings in five times. And so let's go back just maybe 6 years, okay? And that was basically when the Splash Brothers were born, maybe even 7 years. But anyway, just the fact that they were so willing to be 5 feet off the arc. And that's really where I think it's changed. Reggie and those guys, they were great shooters, but I think they lived around the line, whereas these guys will bomb from anywhere.
Well, go like you were saying, go prior to Golden State's run, the Spurs. Yeah. What were the Spurs?
Yeah, well.
Two guys playing with the back to the basket. They had everybody driving and penetrating and dishing or shooting. Yeah. It was a mid-range team. They had three shooters. That guys that could shoot threes.
Pick and roll back to the basket.
They were not.
And I'm telling like my buddy G. Pelham, we're sitting there talking, and I'm like, there isn't a team out there that has four guys that can hit from three like Golden State. Well, now with the injuries, obviously KD's out of there because he's definitely one of those guys that could do it. You know, Klay Thompson's one of those guys. So basically, of the regulars, they've taken at least two of the three, and then you would have an Iguodala, you'd have someone else sprinkled in there that could hit three-point shots for you. But now, all of a sudden, they're less of a three-point shooting team than maybe even Toronto. And Toronto's got guys, Van Bleep, which I like to call him Van Bleep, along with Lowry and, of course, the other guys hitting three.
Look, I'm not mad Toronto's winning the series. I don't like Golden State. I've made that very clear. I think what Golden State did was terrible for the NBA, but I think the shame of this is I wanted somebody to beat Golden State that was actually Golden State. I didn't want somebody to beat
a shell
of the Warriors. The Toronto Raptors last night beat a shell of the Golden State Warriors.
And while I agree with you, let's at least throw out there Kawhi ain't 100%.
Not even close.
It's not even an argument health-wise.
No, I understand. I totally understand.
I mean, Kawhi may not be healthy. He had 30. Klay Thompson and Durant were on the bench doing nothing.
No, I totally get it. I'm just saying he's not 100%. But what I am saying is that I agree with you that it's a bummer that we don't get to see them at full tilt. But I think if we saw them at full tilt, we'd be talking about a 5-game series.
Yeah, you're right.
So where Toronto would have been kind of run out of the gym.
And I think it'll be fascinating tomorrow night. I think Klay Thompson, maybe his last couple of games at Golden State, he's a free agent. He was jonesing to play last night. We'll see. The Durant thing to me is even more interesting. I think it's a foregone conclusion Thompson plays. I think there's a legitimate question whether Kevin Durant plays. Can you win tomorrow night without Durant, with Clay back and without Durant, to buy him two more days to come back for Game 5?
I think that I do think it makes it tough, because whatever Clay is, and they're going to run right at him, whatever sets they can come up with, to test him. And then we all know his game is a catch-and-shoot guy. Can he do that with the hammy as bad as it is right now and still be effective?
I mean, not only that, Durant's been gone for a month. It's not like he's going to walk in and all of a sudden he's the same guy.
Yeah.
That's going to take time. So, I mean, the game four is just critical. I mean, it is absolutely – if they can't beat Toronto in game four, it's done. It's going to be 4-1 over. Toronto's going to win. It's a wrap. Over.
It's a wrap.
Yeah, Draymond afterwards, he goes, we played like crap. We're going to win the next one. We're going to go up to Toronto, win another one, come back here and win another.
Yeah, well, it's easy to say that. But, I mean,
you're trying to talk yourself into it a little bit.
If they're shooting like that, Toronto's shooting like it, continue to shoot well like that, it's not going to be, we're going to win here. No, that ain't happening, man. I'm telling you, it's not.
What happens to the Warriors' legacy if they lose the series? Anything?
I don't think anything.
No, not with the injuries. I don't think so.
No, I mean, five finals in a row, three championships.
It's been great run.
It could potentially be disbanded if Clay. No, again, I don't think Clay leaves. Clay stays and Durant does.
Yeah, I get the feeling now that Clay stays, too. And I don't like that, because I want him to go, wear the purple and gold and be a guy in a Lakers uniform.
He'd be a really good Lakers guy.
Yeah. And who knows whether that'll happen, but I get the feeling more and more like he may stay. And I don't want to make any bigger deal than what it should be about Kevin Durant. The teammates that he has love him. They look like they love him, and he wants to be there with them. This is not like a broken up or a broken relationship with a bad ending, and he wants the hell out of there. It doesn't look like that to me.
Let me ask Leon. Kawhi Leonard, all right, if Toronto wins and he brings the championship to Canada, they're going to go absolutely nuts. So he'll never have to pay for anything in Canada ever again, as long as he lives. He's only been there 1 year. But he is a free agent. Would it be harder for Kawhi Leonard to leave if they win a world title?
You know what? I was at a cigar bar last night, and I was around a bunch of guys, and we were asking that same question. After the game, we was like, hey, if Kawhi Leonard wins this championship, what are the likelihoods of him staying in Toronto? And all the guys said, he loves L.A. too much. He's leaving.
Yeah, but, man,
that's what I said, too.
He can pay him more than anybody.
But he obviously has this attachment to his hometown, which is L.A., and he wants to get back home. Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine him. He wins a championship for Toronto, first in history. He'll be like a Greek god in Toronto, It'd probably be a statue built for him outside the stadium 10 years, 20 years down the road. But if he leaves, I mean, does his legacy leave with him?
Well, take us inside the mind of a pro athlete. What's more important, going to a city that you want to live in or having a better chance to win in a city that maybe you're not as fond of? Because it's going to be easier to win in Toronto. So if you want to win, Toronto's the place, and they can pay you more money. Or if you just want to go home, you want to go home. How do athletes think?
Well, I mean, I left Pittsburgh to come to Jacksonville. I mean, if I stayed in Pittsburgh, that likelihood, I mean, I'm second-guessing myself now, but yeah. I mean, that was a storied franchise. And if I stayed there, the likelihood of me getting to another Super Bowl probably wouldn't be
pretty good.
And you had just come from the bowl.
I just come from the Super Bowl. And so I had motivation to get back. But I wanted to go home.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to Florida. I wanted to be back in Florida. And when I had the opportunity in free agency, the teams that were looking at me were all three Florida teams. It was Miami, Tampa, and Jacksonville. And
now, what if Pittsburgh could offer you $7 million more than Jacksonville? Because Kawhi's going to get more money in Toronto.
First of all, back in those days, and probably still now, they were cheap. Okay, Pittsburgh was historically known for not paying players any money. So probably still to this day.
Was no state sales tax a big deal for you?
Oh, yeah, that too. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
That's what I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's what I'm thinking with Kawhi, too. I mean, as bad as you think L.A. taxes are with that state, it's way worse in Toronto.
They pay
way worse.
Yeah, they sign over quite a bit of their check.
Right. So he's going to make a lot of money there, but he can make a lot more.
Right. I don't know what the math adds up to. We're talking about the max if he stays there. What the difference is tax wise?
Right.
But either one of those is about half of everything you make is going to somebody else, 56% or whatever it might be.
I think Toronto's like up in the 60s. Actually, it's close.
That's just insane to think about, but. It'll be a tough decision for him. You know, a guy can look at it two different ways. Obviously, he can say, hey, I came, I gave you a championship, good luck.
Right.
You know, see you later.
And you know what they'd say? Thank you.
Yeah, right. I gave you one. And then the other half of them is like, man, we did something here. Let's keep it going. So I'm not going to call it a coin flip decision for him, but it's got to be – there's pluses on both sides, I guess.
Well, that's going to be the problem next year in the NBA. If Kyrie Irving leaves the Eastern Conference to go to the Western Conference, you know, if Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris leave the East to go to the West, you got all these guys that are going to be playing out West, it's going to be relatively easy to win in the East, depending on what the Knicks are able to do, depending on what Boston is able to keep, depending on what Philadelphia does. A lot of ifs there, but bottom line is you have much more star power in the West than the East. So if it's truly about winning, he would stay in Toronto. But again, I don't think it's truly about winning. I think it's about comfortability for him and his family.
Yeah. I mean, the Raptors could literally be the Marlins. Win the championship, right in the last.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Got a couple good young players.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know
Siakam,
how much.
Siakam, Van Fleet.
Siakam's really good.
Yeah. And I don't know how much you off in cash as far as payroll is concerned, because that's what the Marlins did.
Right.
They fire-sailed them.
No, but I'm meaning more along the lines of wins and
losses.
Yeah,
you're right. Just like relevant. They're going to tank. Irrelevant. Yeah.
And Toronto's a great city.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Very international.
Is it L.A.? No, but it's a great city.
Yeah, very international.
Oh, yeah. I love Toronto.
Anything you could want, you can find easily.
It's also 20 degrees there.
Oh, I know.
You got to get out of there by October.
Yeah. So you totally.
Right when the season starts. Exactly. Yeah.
So, again, it comes down to, and Kawhi has never, ever given us the idea that he's more about fun than work.
Did you see the great video last night? They're in the tunnel getting ready to take the court against Golden State.
Yeah.
Lowry, I think, it was Kyle Lowry who was trying to give him a fist pound. And Kawhi wanted none of it, not because he was being a jerk, but he was so focused.
Yeah, that's what he is.
He just points to the court and tells Lowry, let's go. Yeah,
Boardman gets paid.
Yeah, that's it. And he
Boardman gets paid.
Intense,
man.
Driven, and there's a lot of good that you can get out of that. All right, so let's take that to the Jaguars. And is this team driven? Doug Marrone talking to the media before OTAs and then out on the practice field wrapping things up. You did have news about Cam Robinson supposed to speak afterwards, and then the decision's been made that he won't.
Yeah, I don't know why that was the case. I guess there was a lot of one-on-one interview requests for other players. So instead of having a group session with one player, a lot of individual sessions with individual players. A couple of things Doug Marrone said. Leon, I thought this was interesting. Will Richardson, we talk about, he's kind of the forgotten guy in the right tackle department.
Fourth round draft pick last year.
Yeah, been working inside a little bit at the guard position. Mm-hmm. So maybe they're trying to find ways to keep Richardson, Oboye, and Taylor all on the roster. So Will Richardson's been working at right guard a little bit. Doug Marrone did talk about that today.
And for what it's worth, whenever he was drafted, both positions were talked about a bunch as far as playing that inside and playing that tackle.
Yeah, and Marrone said the offensive line is one of the best units he's had. That is one of the they've worked together as one of the best units that he's seen in his coaching career.
Well, that's good. That's good. I mean, because when they were healthy in 2017, that Jaguars offensive line had to be top 15. I thought as far as inexperienced, young, or whatever, and still got it done. So, I mean, last year, you know, it was just crazy to lose four of your five offensive linemen throughout the season. So, I mean, that's the reason why they depleted. But the talk on Will Richardson, I think they're moving him around to give him more possibilities to not start but be able to play.
Make him more versatile.
Make him more versatile. Yeah, give him more opportunities. Because if you just stick him at right tackle and that's all he knows is right tackle, and you got Juwan Taylor there and you just got Oboye from the Bengals.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're just trying to rotate him and put him in positions where they feel that he could get some time in.
They already got a swing tackle, and so they're trying to figure out. It would make sense because they're going to have to make some decisions on how many linemen they're carrying, who is it going to be, and all that type of stuff. And they've had Chatley play inside over the last couple of years, been pressed into playing center duty, and I think he played guard as well going back over the last couple of seasons. So just finding out what the strengths are, finding out whether the guy is worthy of a roster spot, which I think is a big deal. And then going back to what you said, Leon, about the line, is that that 2017 unit matched the franchise's best in terms of the least amount of sacks given up.
You're not the number one rushing offense without the offensive line in 2017, and that's what they were. I mean, that takes attitude, because I've been on two of them when I was with the Steelers. That takes attitude. That's guys getting it done. That's guys being mean. That's guys' cohesiveness within the offensive line. I mean, so last year you want to hope that was just a blip and get these guys back healthy and get them back to the
only
the
25 sacks given up 2 years ago. So
and
huge.
One of my thoughts, listening to Doug Marrone today, by the way, this will be the last time Marrone speaks till minicamp. He won't speak tomorrow, so we won't talk to Doug again until minicamp next week. So he was asked, first off, he comes up to the press conference. It's outside in the practice field. All the media's gathered. He's a big Yankee guy, right? Big New York Yankee fan. So he comes up talking about the Yankees game last night, and he obviously doesn't like the Red Sox, and just shooting the breeze with everybody. But then once the cameras started rolling and everything's going live, a question was asked to him about the 18-game schedule. What does he think about the 18-game schedule and the two preseason games? Leon, we talked about it earlier this week. And Doug starts really serious, saying, yeah, you know, I read about that today, and I got to tell you, I have a lot of thoughts on it, and my overwhelming thought is, and he paused, and he said, nobody really gives a blank about what I think. And here's an NFL head coach
it's true,
just dropping bombs out there, just, you know, blank this and blank that. I was dying laughing. You just don't see a lot of NFL head coaches with that kind of humor, I guess is a good word for it.
Kind of a Mike Leach kind of approach.
Just hilarious. He's just blank this and blank that, and it was great, and everybody's laughing and cutting up. And here's a guy that's supposedly on the hot seat this year, right, yeah, after last year's disappointment. Everything we had heard about Marone in Buffalo was horrible from the Buffalo media. They couldn't stand the guy up there. But yet every time, seemingly every time I'm around Doug Marone down here, I find myself laughing at something that he said. I mean, he's a good dude, man.
Yeah, I think we have figured out, and I figured this out a long time ago, that the Buffalo media was bitter. That's all it was.
Terribly bitter.
There was nothing more than bitterness on their part, and so their narrative of this was that Doug Marone was the guy that tucked tail and ran. And he, instead of saying, you know what, the guy did a decent job with a not-so-hot football team and a terrible roster of quarterbacks, and the owner was not smart enough to figure out a way to keep this guy. They put it in his contract where he could get out. Instead of that, they figured they'd slam Marone because it's convenient, because he's the guy that's out of town. He's an easy hit, easy mark as far as the media is concerned. But I think he coaches free. It's like when you see a guy that says, you know what, I don't care if you tell me tomorrow or next year we no longer need you, he's going to have a short amount of time to pack his bag, and he'll be out the door. No hard feelings. He's going to coach his tail off until they tell him that he's not needed anymore. That's just how he looks at it.
We just seem to talk a lot more to me anyway about Dave Caldwell and about Tom Coughlin than we do about Doug Marone. And that's kind of, you know, surprising in a way. I mean, Marone is the head coach. Yet I feel when we're talking about the team and the direction and what's going on and how things are going, yeah, we'll talk about Doug a little bit, but it's mainly Caldwell and it's mainly Coughlin.
I think maybe
he's a little under the radar here.
All right, you guys say what you think. Maybe it's because I believe it's personnel-driven in large part that handcuffed this football team to where they took a major step back. That's the reason why I go after Dave Caldwell for the decisions that were made for a longer period of time than TC.
I would totally agree with that. Not just Dave Caldwell, the previous GMs as well. That's absolutely.
That GM position is a whole.
I mean, the lost decade is directly tied to personnel moves, not only in the draft, who you pick, but also free agency. So, yeah, I completely agree with that. And it's a huge, huge red flag. Whereas with Marone, you kind of think, all right, well, he's dealing with, you know, his hands are tied, one hand tied behind his back. He can only do with what he can only do with the dudes he's got on the field.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it. To me, it is anyway.
And the other thing I worry about is whether he coaches them too hard. That's the one thing I will ask about Marone.
Yeah, well, when they signed Tom Coughlin here 2 years ago, I knew he was going to have his fingerprints on this organization. Even with Doug Marone, when he addresses Tom Coughlin, he calls him coach.
Coach, right.
You know what I'm saying? He's not the coach. You're the coach. This drives me crazy when he does that. But, yeah, Tom Coughlin, I find myself doing this sometimes too, you know, overlooking Doug Marone as the head coach because I've had the affiliation with Tom Coughlin. I know how he loves control. He loves his hands on everything. But in this situation here, you know, Doug Marone is the coach, and just let him coach. But they've got to do a better job, like Matt was saying. We've had a decade of just terrible football with the Jaguars. So the personnel decisions, the draft decisions they make moving forward is going to be the determinant of how well this team moves.
Yeah, I dragged you down quick. I walked out of the OTAs the other day, and I saw TC, and I just said, hey, coach. that's just you.
Hey, listen, I'm the same way. Yeah. I see him now. I call him coach.
Yeah, exactly. Simple as that.
That's because you're still afraid of him.
All right. So more off of the OTAs, and then at least one opinion that's out there that of all the offseason moves, Nick Foles was. I don't want to call it middle of the pack, but we'll debate how far up the rankings it should be as far as a big, big decision in the offseason for this particular franchise and when you compare it to some of the other ones that were made. So we get into all of that. It's XL Primetime. Feel free to join us on the text line, built by Lifetime Enclosures at 641-1010.
More Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
12:31 Thursday afternoon. Joe C., Ryan the Hacker Green, Big Leon Searcy, Matty Hayes, he of the Bleacher Report, and we got E.T. in there. Emmanuel working overtime after J.J. Stats and Info did the drill earlier. E.T., everything good in there, bro?
God. Everything's solid, man.
Everything's good?
Solid.
All right, so throw out the Beaver Toyota Twitter poll question, and let's get him going on the NBA.
Your Twitter poll question of the day that's brought to you by Beaver Toyota of St. Augustine. If Kawhi Leonard leads the Toronto Raptors to the NBA Finals, will he stay?
Simple.
That's simple. Will he stay?
Yes or no?
Yes or no?
Yeah. So at 1010XL on Twitter, we've already thrown out, and again, we're all sitting there wondering. Inside the room, most of us think no, right? Most of us think no.
I think he'll stay.
I think he'll go.
Okay, you do think he'll stay. I'm actually a little surprised.
Because I think he has a better chance to win.
Yeah. And I'm in that camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so that's actually, what, 2-2? Matt, you think he'll go?
Wait, you think he's going to have a better chance to win
in Toronto?
Yeah. And stay and be in the Eastern Conference.
They'll run the East with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which means the NBA, the way it works, if you've got a shot to rule your conference, then obviously you've got a shot to get to the NBA Finals, see LeBron, see Golden State. So I feel that way. But we'll find out.
You think it's going to be more about championships for him than money?
Yeah, I think he's all about the work.
See, this goes back to our argument that we had a few weeks ago. Is it championships or money?
Yeah, yeah.
You guys all made fun of Leon when he said championships.
Yeah. Well, no. I was on the championship side. I was not on the money side.
Barkley.
If we go back to Barkley, then I'm at, because he was the man.
Yeah,
he was the man. And that's probably my argument as opposed to not rings versus money, just that he was the man. He was the star. He was the biggest piece of any team he was on versus a bit player. That was the way I interpreted that argument. You know.
Right. That's right.
I see the smirk over there.
I'm not doing it.
I see the smirk over there.
I was on the Robert Horry train then, and I'm on the Robert Horry train now, on the Kawhi Leonard can win more in Toronto train.
Let me repeat. I was for the guy who was the man as opposed to a role player. Yeah. That's the way I looked at it.
By the way, the Warriors just announced that minority owner Mark Stevens is not allowed to attend any more finals games after his inappropriate contact with Kyle Lowry.
That was ridiculous.
He's lucky Lowry didn't haul off and hit
him. Okay, so let's set this up real quick for anybody who might not have seen this. Game 3 last night, they're in Oakland, and Kyle Lowry goes for an out-of-bounds ball.
He dove hard into the crowd. So he hit the guy.
Yeah, he's going for an out-of-bounds ball, but he does what any other player would have done in that situation. He leaps to try and get the ball back in bounds. Otherwise, it's going to be ball Golden State. So he collides with several fans. And as he's trying to get up, keep in mind, he's diving over chairs and everything. And the lady that was the closest to him, is trying to make room for him. Meanwhile, the guy that's, I guess, was with her, he reaches over and shoves him. And then Kyle Lowry jumps up like, whoa. And you cannot have that situation. And so you're saying that they have said he won't be able to attend any NBA game?
He's not allowed to attend any more finals games.
Yeah, and I don't know. Okay, any more finals games. I don't know how.
This series.
And I don't know how you're going to be able to regulate beyond that. But what did you guys?
He literally shoved him.
Yeah, he shoved him. Yeah.
He actually shoved him.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a bad look for the guy. Absolutely. Kyle Lowry didn't do anything wrong. There's nothing I can say to justify what the guy did. In fact, he's probably lucky he's not barred for life. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't push, shove, make any contact with malice intent on a player, in my opinion. And that's what that fan did in the stands.
Oh, that was clearly malice intent.
Yeah, that's why fans should stay out of that kind of situation. I mean, because what if Lowry had gotten up in an altercation?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, he had every right. I mean, the guy's going for a ball. It's in the confines of the game. He's going after the ball. And then the guy gets mad and he shoves him.
Yeah.
And then if the guy gets up and wants to, you know,
okay,
throw
now
some
to that,
hands.
To that same Leon.
Yeah.
Was Ron Artest justified in doing what he did 15 years ago?
You talk about the
He did get a cup of beer thrown on him or whatever. And Ron Artest went to the stands. Now, he attacked the wrong guy.
Yeah.
The dude that threw it was 6'5", 250. Ron Artest attacked Poindexter, who was next to him, because I guess he didn't know who threw it.
Ron Artest thing, it was a situation where he didn't actually know who did it, so him going in there, it was wrong. I mean, now, if he had seen the guy who threw the beer at him, I mean, because he had to hit his head down and his eyes closed. So he just knew somebody threw something at him. And so he got up, looked at the first person he thought threw it, and he went after him. Now, if he was sitting there and he saw the guy throw the beer, would I have gone in there and confirmed? Absolutely.
As an athlete, you got to be smarter than that.
Leon's saying confront him, not swing on
him. Yeah, we're trying to beat the hell out of the guy.
Have you had people throw stuff at you like that?
When I was with the Steelers, we played the Raiders, the fans threw batteries. Our coaching staff actually told us before we went out of the ramp to put our helmets on.
Helmets on, right.
Because the fans were known for throwing D-size batteries.
D-size?
Yes, at your head.
So. God! You never said anything to anyone in the stadium then?
Two of the worst fans I ever had to deal with was Oakland and the Dog Pound in Cleveland when I was a Steeler. You would literally be there doing your drills, offensive line drills, all this stuff before the game.
Right.
And the fans would talk about your wife,
right,
your kids.
Right.
And you know, it was just – and
they get in your head.
They tried to get in your head, yeah.
I can tell you this, it's funny to me, but it's not funny to the guy that happened to. An incident like that was when Florida went to Athens to play Georgia. And they just beat the doors off Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one where the game was 52-14 something like that, where they kept getting a 15-yard penalty and Spurrier kept throwing the same play, touchdown, 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 penalty, touchdown, penalty, touchdown. It's like 3rd and 34, and threw it again, same play, touchdown, killed them. So they were running off the field. And Spurrier always ran off with Malcolm Jowers, who was his
FHP guy.
FHP guy. And this guy comes running down, and a bunch of the hacks were around Spurrier as he was running in, you know, because we wanted to see what he said to the fans, because you knew he was going to say something. He's running in. This guy runs down with a full thing of dip spit, throws it at him, and Malcolm blocked it, and Malcolm gets hit with dip spit all over him. I mean, that's what you deal with stadiums like
that's terrible, man.
It's gross, but that's probably some of the, like, light stuff compared to what other people have been through.
And like Leon's saying, if you have D-cell batteries coming at you,
dude, that could kill you.
Holy smokes.
That just happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC.
So, guys, per Bleacher Report, Warriors part owner Mark Stevens is the guy who pushed Kyle Lowry.
Wow. So if you think about that, that's ownership. Ownership.
Which that explains.
Yeah, that's the guy who was banned.
I didn't realize that he was part owner.
Yeah, minority owner.
That explains why he's not barred for life.
Yeah.
We'll bar you for the next game or two. Please keep writing checks.
Yeah, we still need your checkbook.
Yeah.
So I guess that, but.
If that was an average Joe, he would be barred for life.
Yeah, and at the same time, that guy's got to know, okay? Got to know. And Kyle Lowry explained himself very well. He goes, the situation that I'm in, I can't react to that. He knew it.
Well, the NBA is going to have to do something, because the NBA really is the only sport, baseball to a certain extent in the outfield, but really the NBA, the fans are right there. I mean, they're 5 feet from the court. I mean,
there's
you have courtside
right.
seats. There are literally courtside seats. And we've seen situations now with Russell Westbrook many times in Utah. You've now seen Kyle Lowry in his situation. You've seen Drake get into it, even though Drake's a celebrity, with guys like Draymond Green and, you know, Joel Embiid and all these guys. I don't know what the NBA can do necessarily, but these are starting to add up more and more and more. And eventually, we will get another Malice in the Palace type situation. And at that point, it's going to be too little too late for the NBA. So I would not be surprised at all. Again, I don't know what they can do, Leon, but they're going to do something, because these events keep happening more frequently.
Yeah, they have to do something. And the fans have got to conduct themselves much better. I mean, because when they're around the game, and whether they're the home team or their away team, they feel like that whatever they do, that's a part of helping their team out.
Right.
But no, the game is played on the court.
Yeah.
You're there to watch. You're a spectator. Your involvement is nothing more than cheering and drinking your beer and enjoying yourself.
And then they get badge. They get that badge, don't they?
The situation we had here, right? Seattle-Jacksonville, 2017. You had guys in the stands just throwing, you know, cups of ice and plastic beer cups at a couple Seahawk players. That's ludicrous. And then what was even more ludicrous is a local TV station had two of these guys on saying, you don't mess with Duval. I mean, what are you – are you kidding me?
Yeah.
When it comes to that?
Here's Lowry's response from last night.
If you watch it, you know, he reached over and put his hands on me for no reason. Right. And then he said a couple, you know, some vulgar words to me and you know, repeated them repeatedly. But, you know, in our league, there's no place for that. You know, honestly, I hope he's never allowed to come to an NBA game because he shouldn't have did that. There is no place for that. And, you know, and luckily, you know, they threw him out. I talked to the league's security already and explained myself. And, you know, I don't really, you know, the fans have a place. We love our fans. But fans like that, they shouldn't be allowed to be in there because, you know, it's not right. And, you know, I can't do nothing to protect myself. But, you know, the league does a good job. And, you know, hopefully they ban them from all NBA games ever.
How many situations have we seen guys go into the stands, athletes go into the stands, with ill will on their mind? Ron Artest was one. That was the Malice in the Palace. Wasn't there a big hockey one back in the 70s or 80s that got really bad?
But it is funny that they're so isolated.
Right. You'd think there'd be so many.
Yeah, thankfully.
What was the Vernon Maxwell story? Vernon Maxwell, was it an NBA game where a fan was basically ripping Vernon Maxwell's family? And Leon's already said many times, family's off limits, right? At least in the locker room. And if somebody, look, I can't blame a guy. If a fan wants to go say something about your wife or your son or your daughter or whatever, that would take an awful lot of restraint not to confront that person.
No, you get dealt with. You go wife. you go wife or children.
And or mama.
Or mama. Oh, yeah, you get dealt with.
See, but the problem, Leon, is that fans, if they hear you say that, you know, maybe some fans are crazy enough to do something like that, go in like that, thinking, well, I'll get a reaction out of this guy. I'll get him in trouble.
Mission
accomplished. Thus, that helps my team in the long run.
Well, yeah.
J.J. Redick used to take a whooping. Like, people used to, like, really attack J.J. Redick for – apparently he has a disabled sister, and they used to, like, attack him really bad. But he handled it every time, obviously.
It's ludicrous. But there are people that are crazy enough to try to want to get somebody else in trouble, so they will say whatever or do whatever to get said person in trouble, maybe get him suspended or what have you.
Yeah, and hopefully the player is smart enough to say – you know, someone inside the team say, take a look at this guy, get him out.
Yeah, okay, see, when it comes to that kind of situation where a fan acts like that, let's just say Jacksonville, for instance, there has to be collectively fans that see that guy doing that and call him out and then let the organization know about it to get him up out of there. Because if you don't say anything about whatever he's saying or, you know, bad, then you're condoning it. If you hear it, you don't do anything about it, then you're condoning it. So if there's a fan that's just outrageous with language or talking bad about parents or family member, wife, and all that kind of stuff, you got to call that fan out so the organization can get them out there.
Yeah, I feel like the competitors ought to be able to go out there and perform and not have to worry about those types of things. And I know it's inevitable and it's everywhere, but I agree. If you can clean it up a little bit,
because listen, I used to love to go away games and I like the trash talking from the fans.
Yeah.
But but the trash talking would be Cersei, you suck, or Cersei this and that. You gave up that pressure.
You're fine with that.
I love that.
Fine,
I love that because when we win, I turn and I try to find that fan and I say, look at the scoreboard. So I like friendly banter. But when it gets when you start the cursing and you start talking about family and this and that, then it's off limits.
Yeah, do not bring up mama. All right, so let's go with what we were talking about earlier as far as the offseason is concerned and the transaction that was made here. Where is the outside world looking at it right now with Nick Foles coming to town?
You know, the interesting thing, ESPN.com within the last couple of days has talked about a top 25 position upgrades in the National Football League. And what does that mean? Well, it means any team in the NFL – how much better they got at a given position. Prime example, number one on their list is Antonio Brown replacing Jordy Nelson as the number one wide receiver for the Oakland Raiders. That is absolutely a position upgrade. And ESPN deems Antonio Brown over Jordy Nelson is the best position upgrade in the NFL. Now here in Jacksonville, obviously Nick Foles has replaced Blake Bortles. And what was interesting to me about this is it wasn't in the top five of this list. It wasn't 6, 7, 8, or 9 on this list. It did come in at number 10. But you think nine other transactions in the NFL, at least in the minds of ESPN.com, were bigger, more relevant than Foles replacing Bortles.
As an example, just a couple of the other ones that are in
the
top 10.
Yeah, so I mentioned
10.
Antonio Brown over Jordy Nelson. Yeah. Number two, Le'Veon Bell, replacing Isaiah Crowell, starting running back with the Jets. Number three, Odell Beckham Jr., replacing Antonio Callaway in the starting lineup at wide receiver
for
Cleveland.
So now basically they've gone with three of the biggest names, personalities, and storylines.
But, Tyrann Mathieu replacing Eric Berry as the Chiefs' starting strong safety.
Right, so my answer quickly would be, it's the quarterback.
Right.
Are you going to just, like, dismiss the importance of the quarterback position because you have either a mixed opinion or a mid-level opinion of Nick Foles? Sure, OBJ coming there and Antonio Brown going to Oakland.
And I'll even give you Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, I might. But then when you go to the Honey Badger safety position.
All right, Trey Flowers replacing Ziggy Ansah.
No.
As a starting defensive end in Detroit.
Not going there.
Yeah, none of those guys throw the ball.
No.
That's a quarterback-driven league. Nick Foles should have been number one.
Yeah.
It should have been number one.
Foles over Bortles is 10. By the way, if Foles were to do this, 4,042 yards passing, 18 touchdowns, 14 picks, would that be considered a good year, bad year?
Say it again.
4,000 yards passing, 18 touchdowns, 14 interceptions.
I think that's not such a hot year.
That's a terrible year.
It all depends what the win-loss is.
And the reason I bring it up, that's ESPN's analytics, talking about Foles' 2019 projection. Yeah. 4,042 yards passing, again, 18 touchdowns, 14 interceptions.
What if they're 11-5 and win the division with that?
Yeah. My quick translation of 4,000 yards.
I don't either, but I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, because my quick translation of 4,000 yards and only 18 touchdowns and that many picks is that you're playing from behind.
From behind, right.
Right?
Oh,
right.
Maybe we're running the ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Establishing the run at the line of scrimmage. opening up the play action
There you
pass.
Go. I love
it. But those 14 picks are far too many for Nick Foles. For Foles to be successful here, he's got to be a guy that plays a clean game, doesn't make that many mistakes, fits the ball in, doesn't take unnecessary chances. Make sure that you get that either he keeps the drive going or he keeps himself his team in a decent position.
You do forget some of these free agent moves, like LaMarcus Joyner replacing Nick Nelson at safety for Oakland, DeSean Jackson replacing Jordan Matthews in Philadelphia. We spent so much time talking about OTAs and the draft, and you kind of forget what some of these teams did in free agency. Trent Brown, the big money he got, he's 18th on this list, replacing Brandon Parker in Oakland. Jawan James. I talked about Jawan James coming here to play right tackle. He goes to Denver. He's 17th on this list, replacing Jared Voldeer with the Denver Broncos. So a lot of transactions did happen. That, to me, is one of the best parts about preseason. And once training camps open, there's all these free agents in new places. You can see how they're adapting to their new teams.
And I think we all know free agents, it's a coin flip in a lot of ways. We always go back. We were talking about the best free agent transactions that this team's ever made. Jimmy Smith is the guy that for a lot of people's at the top, but still was
even count him.
I know. I look at that.
He's like a street free agent.
Yeah, and so I always look at Leon's acquisition at right tackle because you had bookend tackles that had that led to this team dominating at the line of scrimmage, dominating in the win-loss column. And then I look at a Mike Pete at the middle linebacker spot and a few other ones.
Calais.
Paul Posluszny, of course, Calais for sure.
You know what? You want to talk about a poll question?
Mm-hmm.
You just listed four really good free agents.
Yeah.
Now, Leon's probably going to win because I'm hoping the views of people listening on a daily basis to XL Primetime will be jaded and they will vote for Leon. And I might vote for you too. But the best free agent ever to sign here, if you were to go Leon Searcy, Mike Peterson, Paul Posluszny, Calais Campbell, that would be
a
heck of a list.
They're all good. It makes it tough. ET, write that down. That might be it tomorrow. Leon will actually be off tomorrow as you're heading up to
right,
with
which
Darryl
means
Green.
We can all vote without the fear of the hands.
We can all vote for Calais Campbell without Leon hearing it.
Yeah. Some people underestimate the actual transition it takes for you to be a free agent. I mean, because it was hard for me, to be quite honest with you. It was hard for me. It was hard being a right tackle, knowing that your quarterback was a left-handed, too. So my angles and adjustments and all that stuff had to differentiate. I couldn't be as – because when I was with the Steelers, I could be a little bit more aggressive in my pass protecting and all that kind of stuff. But now, knowing that I was protecting the blind side, you know, my angles, my patience and all that stuff had to adjust because, you know –
That's interesting.
You know, I had to deal with that. Then I had to deal with the situation where it was just brutal here. I had been in Pittsburgh for so long. I forgot how hot it got in Florida, and you know, Camp Hale was just just terrible for me. So, I mean, I had to deal with those kind of transitions.
But you went from Camp Hill to Camp Nate, and that got you through.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you signed with the Jaguars in March of your free agent year?
I did.
All right, so by the time June and July roll around, like, mm-hmm. the free agents are going through here, like Jake Ryan, like Chris Conley, like Nick Foles, obviously, you got a pretty firm grasp on what's going on playbook-wise, the new city, your new surroundings, or – does it take a little longer than 3 months?
Well, the first thing I did is when I got back here for voluntary mandatory workouts, I went and got the playbook. I wanted to know everything about the playbook. So when I got on the field, there would be no issues on, you know, me having to adjust. So I got in the playbook. The only thing I had to deal with was just getting my body acclimated to the fact that it was hot as hell in Florida. I had forgotten. I mean, for real. I mean, I was dehydrating. I was sweating. I was cramping. I never did none of that. I was questioning my conditioning when I first got here.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the stuff that I was doing in Pittsburgh, I would just be flying, you know. And then when I got here, I struggled. I said, wait, bro.
What about, like, buying a house, moving your family? I mean, that's stuff people don't really take into account.
Yeah. Well, yeah, buying a house. Well, I had already had my house here in Florida. My house was in Orlando. I had already built it when I was with the Steelers, so I had a house here already.
Right, but you obviously know, needed somewhere to stay here.
Yeah, yeah. I got a little condo or something like that, you know, so we adjusted. Well, my family, you know, they stayed there. It was only a two-hour drive, so if they needed something, they would come up or whatever. I would stay in the condo. It was cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that probably worked out great. Mm-hmm. Then you didn't have to buy two houses and worry about all that stuff, that's for sure. In the 1 o'clock hour, we got our Corona countdown to kickoff. As we get closer and closer to the 100th NFL season, we're down to number 92 in our countdown. All summer long, thanks to Corona, we can count it down. So find your beach with a cold Corona or Corona Premier. So in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll have one of those great moments, but then also look a little more. You mentioned Doug Marrone and how people basically look at him as the head coach here. Already some on the text line taking a shot at Doug Marrone.
I saw that. I think that's ludicrous. Yeah,
and so, look, it's a mixed bag in terms of you know, who you give the most credit to, the team, the coach, all that stuff. It's always an argument that will probably never be solved, because if it's a great team, then the coach probably doesn't get as much credit as he deserves, or vice versa.
You could make the argument Marrone's the second-best head coach already in Jaguar history,
yeah.
you know, behind Coughlin. I mean, is Marrone, in getting the AFC title game this early on, has he already surpassed what Del Rio did here in his 9 years? Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair question.
I get on fans just about appreciating players by going through camps and stuff like that. You know what? When players take shots at coaches and stuff like that, you know, getting their position for just a day, with the stuff that the amount of stuff that they have, the amount of information they've got to translate, not understand themselves, and then to relay it to 55 to 60 other players.
And get them all to pay attention.
And get them all to – exactly.
And not only,
and to be able to motivate them as well.
It's not easy. No, you're really – you're doing a lot of different things. So we'll get into that in the 1 o'clock hour. It's XL Primetime on a Thursday.
We saved you a seat. It's Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
We got Big Leon Searcy with us for another half hour. Former Jacksonville Jaguar, one of the 25. We've been going down memory lane with a lot of Jaguars. And let's do it right now as we say hello to Rashad Jennings, another one of the former Jags that we like to say welcome back to Duval. How are you, Rashad?
Duval. Hey, I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you?
Hey, man, we appreciate you taking a few minutes. We are doing great. We'll all go around the table and throw some questions at you. But, you know, first and foremost, your time in Jacksonville, as you look back on an NFL career, as you reflect and all that stuff, just describe your time here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I absolutely love Jacksonville. It's a part of my heart. Truly, it really is. It's the foundation of my career in the NFL. With the city that really took the unlikely, unprincipled kid, seventh-round draft pick, gave me a chance. The community, the fan-based organization, you know, the leadership on the team, everybody I got a chance to learn from. I truly love it. Soak it in. But I'm always going to be appreciative of my stomping ground. I try to come back as much as I can, do a lot of community work there. But it's a staple, man. It truly is. When I look back, 2009 being drafted, it very well was one team that gave me a true shot, because Jacksonville was actually coaching their coaching staff, coaching before I had a chance to work with them personally. If it wasn't for that, who knows where I would have ended up at.
Former Jaguar Rashad Jennings here with us on XL Primetime. You know, Rashad, obviously, you do much more than football now with what you've done as far as an author, Dancing with the Stars. We'll get to all that here in just a moment. But you mentioned a team giving you a shot. Do you have one, you know, lasting moment, lasting memory of your 4 years here in a Jaguar uniform?
I need a book. Got a lot. I mean, I go back to my first touchdown, right? My first touchdown as a rookie. And Maurice Jones-Drew, we all know he's a monster, right? And he was in the game, and his shoe came off. And he couldn't get his shoe back on. And the team, we're in the huddle right now. David Garage about to call the play. And Maurice couldn't get his shoe on. So he looked at the sideline, angry as I don't know what, because he had to come out of the game. Coach puts me in. It's my first time in the game, and I'm like nervous, I'm excited, all these things going through my head. Call a run play. And my very first play, I scored a 30-yard touchdown against Kansas City. Now I'm crunk. You can't tell me nothing. I'm throwing the ball up in the air like teammates going crazy. It's a deal. Now I come back. I'm going to just say this. Like, Maurice, he hates coming off the field. He, from the rest of the season, he spat it. That shoot never came off. So, like, that's just a fun memory I always have. And I say Mike Thomas catches the hell. Against the Titans. I never forget that one either when we ended up winning. It's a lot of different memories, man, but just the people, locker room talk, and everybody I learned from.
Hey, Rashad, Leon Searcy here. We're both former Jaguar players, and we know how the fans love their former players and their current players. How do you stay connected with the Jaguars community as a former player?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that. So, for myself, I do a lot of community work. I every single Tuesday, while I was a Jaguar, I spent 1 hour in the community because that was our office. And, getting in the know the local business owners and, going to school, public speaking, things of that nature. I always try to spread my wings as much as I can. Because I tell people, there's nothing special about me. It's just a special position that I find myself in that you need, truly. And through that, I get to be a magnifying glass for things I think are important. And for me, reading, education, literacy is major. And now that I've become a New York Times seller, New York Times bestseller, from the book, The Infinite Life, and now I have a kid series out, 1 of 4. I promote the books. I go to school to still visit. I have friends and family that
Hey, Rashad, you obviously came from Liberty, and it's a different world when you're talking about FCS jump to the NFL. Jaguars have Quincy Williams from Murray State. What's the transition like when you go from that level to the NFL?
It's a big jump. It really is. I tell guys a lot that the game of football is never going to change. It can't. The rules can, but the actual game won't. And the transition from the collegiate level to the pros is one thing. It's not the speed of the players. If you got a guy that runs a 4 or 5 in college and runs a 4 or 5 in the NFL, it's the same speed. You're not dealing with all of a sudden just unrealistically, dramatically different human beings. What you're dealing with is you're dealing with different minds. So in college, if I had a hole that opened up as a running back, there's a hole that opened up, and it's open for 2.5 to 3 seconds. That same hole in the NFL is going to be open for 0.5 to 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So it's not necessarily the speed of humans. It's the mind that are changing so quick. So I had to become more of a student of the game. You have to become more aware of what's happening before it happens. You have to stop playing checkers and start playing. I think it's the best way to break it down for anybody coming in, especially from a small level school, because the talent gets better.
A lot of moments here with former Jaguar running back Rashad Jennings. You know, Rashad, if I were to tell you 10 years ago, after being a late-round draft pick out of Liberty by the Jaguars, that you would go on to become a New York Times best-selling author. You would win a reality TV show on ABC, Dancing with the Stars, and you would be doing everything that you're doing, including in the world of football, but everything outside the world of football. What would you have thought then? Because you have turned into, you have made quite the career for yourself.
Man, if you'd have told me that my rookie year, I would have laughed. Especially when you talk about dancing. I ain't never danced a day in my life outside of. I'm your average guy, man. I go to the club. I'm in there doing my little two step. But like the show, like ballroom specifically, my partner, the first time she asked me to get in frame. All right, she said, "Let's get in frame." I thought the girl wanted to take a picture. I didn't know like there was a ballroom frame that you're supposed to get in when you dance. Like it was beside me. I had a ball and I fell in love with dance. I continue to dance now. And but all these other things, I will tell you this: I'm a nerd, man. I'm an autodidact. I love learning. I'm attracted to learning. And ironically enough, when I was a rookie, it wouldn't surprise. It never surprises any of my teammates. They always call me and be like, "Man, we knew you was going to be doing something." Because I was a guy in the locker room when we had some downtime. You know, hey, guys, let's get up. Let's get on a whiteboard. Let's create. What did you major in? What did you study in? Let's see what I fit with. See if we can develop a business between us. And I'm attracted to learning. I picked up a different art every offseason. The guitar, archery, poetry, Olympic-style fencing. And I learned how to do magic tricks, right, with my opposite hand. Like, I'm just attracted to learning new things. And so it's fun being in West Hollywood, in L.A., and getting a chance to rub shoulders with a lot of different people and create so many different shows. Like, I have, like, four different things that I'm excited to share at some point here right now. But, you know, I feel like I'm a kid inside of an adult Toys R Us. That's how I see it.
Hey, listen, it really is. It puts a smile on people's faces when you hear the energy, hear the optimism, the belief going forward in many more things to come. So continued success, Rashad. We'll remind people about your new fiction book series for children, The Coin Slot Chronicles, and all that's out there. And, dude, we hope to catch up again when you got that next big thing that's happening.
Thanks, man. I appreciate y'all. Yeah, and I'm at Rashad Jennings on Instagram, Twitter, every social media. And especially if you're a teacher inside of a school, my last book, it has a teacher's curriculum with it. It has a teacher's guide with it. And one of the things that I'm doing is all schools that implement my book, part of their program, I come make a school visit. So I know for me growing up, it would have been amazing for myself as a reader to be able to have a conversation with the author. And so I do a lot of school visits. So just keep that in mind for anybody that's.
Really cool. Yeah, we will definitely pass that on. My son-in-law and my daughter in the teaching world, so I'll make sure I pass it on. Rashad, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Appreciate y'all.
All right, man.
It's an impressive guy right there, Rashad Jennings, former Jacksonville Jaguar, New York Times best-selling author. But I think the one thing that got me, poetry and Olympic-style fencing.
Yeah.
Boy, that's Leon, you ever thought about doing Olympic-style fencing?
No.
Perhaps you and I can get the fencing get up on, and we can put it on the Facebook page for 1010XL.
I would love to see you get
see what happens
in fencing garb.
Yeah.
I would love that.
You're open for what?
I'm always open to new opportunities, new things.
Yeah.
Try a new thing. Absolutely.
I would rather see the
suit. But I'm not getting in the suit.
I was going to say, I'd rather see the sumo costumes come on instead of the fencing costumes, which would be cool, and just bounce around and see who hits the ground first. But it is neat the way he's talking about it. I watched a bunch of the ceremonies this morning over in Europe and France for D-Day, the 75th anniversary of D-Day, and just so many moving moments in that with the president of France, president of the United States, the speeches that they gave, the veterans that are still alive that were there, and they always refer to that generation of people as the greatest generation, which I don't argue with at all. But then when you hear a guy like this that says, you know what, everything's still in front of me, I got so many more things to do, it's really cool to hear that. It's something else. And guys got a great opportunity to be able to touch a lot of other people in a positive way, which is pretty neat. One more thing on the 75th year of D-Day and just the enormity of everything that went on. One guy struck me a little bit. Think about being born in that time. And my my two great aunts, one was born in the early 20s and the other one in the mid-20s, because one of them's 97 and the other one's 95, right? And just imagine, they said there were 17, 18, and 19-year-olds that were flying into that D-Day mission. But imagine being born, as lucky as we have it right now, imagine being born into the Great Depression and World War II.
Yeah.
Within the first, basically the first 20, 25 years of your life.
My dad was 17 when he was in the Pacific Theater.
Yeah.
17.
Yeah, it's something else. So we say it all the time. I mean it every single time I say it. Anybody who has served, especially if you have generations before you that served in World War II.
Conflict, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You can't say enough about them, that's for sure, really. All right, 1 o'clock hour, keep it rolling. A few more things in the NFL front, and then also some college football stuff we want to throw at you.
I want to throw this at you guys. So yesterday we did the top five running backs in Jaguar history, right? And I brought up the fact that T.J. Yeldon was among the top five if you look at statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about how sad that was. Well, I got a text here from the 386 on the text line. Hacker, you are a clown. At the end of yesterday's show, you mentioned that T.J. Yeldon is a top five running back. You are very sad. What about Fred Taylor, Mojo, James Stewart, Leonard Fournette, yada, 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 yada. So obviously this person, A, has no idea what they're talking about and didn't entirely listen to what we were doing. So here's my response, and I want you to tell me if this is a good response or if I'm being a little childish. I said T.J. Yeldon is a top five Jags tailback if you look at his stats, which I was. Know what you are talking about before you insult someone, my man. Not a good look for you. Educate yourself. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll hit send and appreciate the 386 listening.
Yeah.
But before you want to rip somebody, know what the hell you're talking about.
In my world, that's called a chin check. Good chin check.
Thank you, buddy.
It's XL Primetime.
You're riding in the First Coast Honda Dealer Studios. XL Primetime on 1010XL.
Jacksonville. Join us Saturday, June 8th, for Education Appreciation and Superhero Night.
Presented by the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl.
Family four packs are on sale.
That's four tickets, four hot dogs, four coats, and four bags of chips
for only $60. And enjoy buy one, get one free tickets for all teachers, faculty, and school employees. For tickets, call 904-621-0700. That's 904-621-0700. Or visit jacksharks.com.
Josie for Southwest Greens, synthetic turf. You don't have to mow it. You don't have to weed it. You don't have to do any of that stuff. Synthetic turf, you can have it in your backyard. You can really put together a great field. I've got it. Southwest Greens set me up with a beautiful putting green, a little chipping area as well. And if you're thinking about that space where you just want to create this ultimate outdoor experience, include that in your plans. Log on locally, JacksonvillePuttingGreens.com, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
I really couldn't play golf. I couldn't even walk very far.
Here's Nancy Anderson to talk about her experience with Southeast Orthopedic Specialist.
I chose Southeast Orthopedic Specialist because of the reputation of the different surgeons and the hospital experience. And just overall, I'd heard so many great things. And truly, my life is enriched tenfold because now I can do anything.
Get your body moving again with Southeast Orthopedic Specialists. Find out more at se-ortho.com.
John's Auto has been in Jacksonville for 32 years. That doesn't happen by cheating customers. At John's Auto, their reputation is in its work. Top quality for a lower price. It's full service at John's Auto. Brake, shocks, alignment, transmission, front end repair, tires.
Research study. Call 844-3-MY-EYES or visit MyEyeCareStudy.com. That's 844-3-MY-EYES or visit MyEyeCareStudy.com.
At Indeed, we understand that when it comes to hiring, it's important to have a large talent pool to choose from. But sometimes too many good options can be overwhelming. That's why Indeed doesn't just give you access to a large pool of job seekers. We also offer screener tools that let you instantly narrow down your search. Hone in on hiring with Indeed. Experience Indeed for yourself today and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting at Indeed.com/promo. Terms and conditions apply.
The NFL offseason on 1010XL is brought to you by TireOutlet.com.
Follow organized team activities.
Find out what we're made of right now. Let's go.
Brought to you by Superior Fence and Rail.
And One-to-One Financial.
Football season never ends on 1010XL. More Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
Go back to my first touchdown, right? Maurice Jones-Drew. We all know he's a monster, right? He was in the game, and his shoe came off. Couldn't get his shoe back on. And the team, we're in the huddle right now. That's Rod's about to call the play. And Maurice couldn't get his shoe on. So he looked at the sideline, angry as I don't know what, because he had to come out of the game. Coach puts me in. This is my first time for in the game. I'm like nervous, excited, all these things going through my head. Call a run play. My very first play. I scored a 30-yard touchdown. Now I'm crunk. Can't tell nothing. I'm going ball up in the air like teammates going crazy. It's a deal.
Rashad Jennings with a great memory, and if you touch it for the first time in an NFL game and you take it to the house, that's pretty cool. That was a great memory from Rashad Jennings, former Jacksonville Jaguar, that was able to go down memory lane with us a few minutes ago and talk about that big moment for him. And Maurice Jones-Drew did not give up the rock very often, that's for sure. And all I could think of is when Rashad's telling that is the old Eddie Murphy bit, my shoe. That's the way he said it. I'm pretty sure he's probably heard it as well, which was classic. Rashad Jennings, as I've said before, when MJD left, when that holdout slash season ended, and that was his final year in Jacksonville, and he went on to Oakland, there was a chance for Rashad Jennings to be the man here. And Rashad Jennings had been good at times, and then the injury hit him very early in the year, and it really stunk that he really didn't have a 100% go at it health-wise to be able to prove that he could do it.
You could make the argument, and everybody goes to Reggie Nelson, and Reggie Nelson's probably the poster child, guys that had the most productive careers after leaving Jacksonville. Rashad Jennings is probably on that list. I don't know if he was as good as Reggie Nelson was in Cincinnati, but Rashad Jennings had good years in New York.
Yeah, never great, but good. Yeah.
Never great. He was an 800-yard guy, 750-yard guy. I mean, very, very serviceable, very solid. There's not a lot of guys that have left here that have gone on to great success. But if you were to name a couple, obviously you'd name Reggie Nelson, and I would put a guy like Rashad Jennings on that list as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you guys numbers guys? I know Hack's a numbers guy. Like, do you think of jersey numbers and immediately, if someone says a number, you can immediately think of a player wearing it?
80.
Yeah.
Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could do it. Yeah.
You're a numbers guy. ET says he's a numbers guy. So they went through basically the best numbers earlier this week as far as who's wearing what right now. And if you were able to get this team with these numbers, that's a pretty good group right there. Only a couple from Jacksonville are on the list. But just as an example, you go through the likes of DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, Tom Brady, Odell Beckham, Stephon Diggs, Pat Mahomes, just to name a handful in the teens. But there are a couple of Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, like what CBS did is they took every number 20 in the NFL. Who's the best number 20? Well, it was deemed to be Jalen Ramsey. Mm-hmm. Well, no kidding. The other Jaguars that made the list, Miles Jack, deemed to be the best number 44. In the National Football League, Andrew Norwell, deemed to be the best number 68 in the National Football League, and Calais Campbell, deemed to be the best number 93. Number 91 was not Ngakoue.
Yeah.
That nod went to Fletcher Cox of Philadelphia. That would be hard to argue. Fletcher Cox is a ridiculously, ridiculously good player. I don't know why I'm always a numbers guy. More so, it's just with the Jaguars, the Magic, and the Gators. The three teams, I mean, I could tell you that Jerry Rice was 80. I don't know if I could tell you what number John Taylor was in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I mean, I know like the Hall of Famers, but if you go Jaguars, if you go Gators, or if you go Orlando Magic, I like to think I'm pretty good. In fact, Frangie and I, Joe knows this, Frangie and I will do this for an hour every, you know, so often. We'll start listing Gators in the 1990s.
Crazy.
Hey, what number did this guy wear?
Who's the greatest number 33 in Gator history?
Eric Rett. Probably great. Yeah, I'd have to think. Yeah, no love for Tico Brown, safety back in the day.
I liked her.
You know all the numbers and all the Gators in the 90s. Huh?
I don't know all of them, but I could do pretty well on
what
that.
What number was Scott Bryan?
Well, see, I mean, look, if you want to give me the seventh ranked punter, I mean, no, I know more than you.
Yeah,
I know more than you.
Well, I mean, I hope so.
If you and I were to do Gator number trivia, I would crush you. But I don't know who the seventh ranked, I don't even know who the hell Scott Bryan is. I have no idea. Who is that?
He's an offensive tackle.
I have no idea. But like, if
what number was Wiley Rich?
59.
Okay. Well, that was quick.
I'm weird. I'm wired weird. Now, I'm not as good as Frangie. Frangie is an encyclopedia. You want to talk about an encyclopedia for jersey numbers? I will gladly admit, Frank Frangie.
Well, he'll do.
You
he'll
name
do
him. Whole. You give him a Gator from 1992, and he'll name you the entire roster of numbers.
He'll do
it's
whole
crazy.
Baseball lineups too. Yeah. So that's his deal. And he once he locked in, he's like, if I'm going to say it, I better know it. And he definitely does. And I'm in and out. I'm half good, half bad.
And I shouldn't say I would crush Matt. I think I would probably get you.
No,
you'd
crush me. I think
you would get me on the obscure ones.
You'd crush me.
But why, of all the Gators you could have named,
greatest
you come out
22.
With Wiley Rich.
Greatest number 22 in Gator history.
22?
Yeah.
Emmett. Right?
That was a softball.
Yeah. And he was.
Reggie Lewis out of First Coast High School.
What number was
good.
Will White?
Number two. Will White got beat by Lawrence Dawsey in 1990 on a pass from Casey.
And Will
Weldon.
White was a decent. He was a decent player.
He's a three-time All-American, man.
Yeah, he was a decent.
You had
player.
Will White too. Larry Kennedy was three. Del Spear was four. That's right when I started
what
following
about Knowles?
The Gators.
Can you do the Knowles too, or not?
I'm not. I mean, I could do some Seminoles, but not.
You
like
already
the Gators.
Know the answer to that. Come on.
I could give you Kirk Carruthers, number 45, right? Yeah. I could do Sean Hamlett, number 18, but I can't do a lot of.
But it's funny.
Stuff.
I used to be able to either say a player and you could visualize the number immediately. And that's just slowly fading away. So
quickly fading
you
away.
You know, with another Funky Buddha IPA,
right, well,
that's just.
It's age, but it's also.
Slowly fading away.
Don't care. Yeah. At the
right.
point where
there's
it's
just
like,
too
care.
Many
right.
of them.
Right.
Yeah, it's like there's certain things that I can remember and rattle off. Major title holders.
Yeah, but you say that. I bet the Jaguars or Reggie Williams.
Yeah. Yeah, and all of them, I just got to do the pause, but it's 10. And there's
well, it was 11, but you're close
11. See, there you go. See, I'd have to just kind of warm up, tune up. And start visualizing them. So I immediately thought it was 10 for him. But yeah.
And I admittedly, it's an irrelevant topic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a lot of brain power goes into it. I'm not going to make any money knowing that Matt Jones were number 18 or Ernest Wilford were 19 or whatever. But it's just
like
something
right
that
now,
I'll follow.
What about Jaques Green?
5 and 12. We're both.
I thought he was going to say 5, then I was going to
say 5
and 12.
Yeah. And we're both.
Because I would probably get more wrong than right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought I had you on that.
Hey, heck.
Yeah.
How many numbers did Michael Jordan wear?
23, 45.
More than
just those two.
No, he wore another number.
For the Bulls?
Actually, against your Orlando Magic, he wore this number.
No, he wore 45 against the Magic. What number?
He wore 12 because his jersey got stolen.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous.
That's a good question.
You got to have
see?
That.
That's the little known fact. That's the L. Okay.
If you want to jam on Sports Jeopardy, man, you got to know that.
That's E bringing the noise,
you
man. I did
know.
Not know
you
that.
You got to know that, man.
But I do like to follow numbers. Speaking of Andrew Norwell, we mentioned he was the best 68 in the league, according to CBS. Mm-hmm. How about Norwell on Pro Football Talk saying he let his teammates down getting injured last year? Said it was the most unhealthy he's been as a football player in his entire career, and he said that he doesn't plan on letting his teammates down like that again. Leon, how much to heart do guys take getting injured, and do they really believe an injury lets their teammates down?
Yeah, you take it personal. I know I did, and a lot of players do. When you're injured, you're not out there, you're not sweating, you're not practicing, you're not playing, you don't really feel a part of the club. I mean, when I got injured when I was with the Ravens, I mean, during training camp, it was particular times where I would go in there and get my meal and go eat it in my room. Because I just didn't feel right being around those guys, knowing they were out there practicing, sweating, conditioning,
getting themselves
ready for the season, mentally and physically preparing themselves. And I was just sitting out there watching. I just took it too personal.
And almost like depressing?
Oh, yeah. Very depressing. Yeah. Very depressing. Like, very lonely place.
Tick you off, depressed, you know.
You go through all those emotions.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that. So I do appreciate that Norwell's basically saying, you know what? It wasn't me. I didn't quit on this team, but my body quit on me, and therefore I feel like I got to come back and be 100% and be right there. Like brothers in arms, basically, is how you're looking at it.
Yeah, basically. But you listen, injuries are a part of the game. I mean, you just got to deal with it. Injuries are a part of the game. But as far as your psyche goes, I mean, you lose focus because there's nothing you can do. I mean, when it's an injury where you can't play or practice anything like that, that's the most debilitating thing for a player is that when he knows that he wants to be out there but can't, can't do anything.
Well,
about
I mean, fans don't see, and really media for that matter, we don't see very much of it, the rehab part of it. We hear somebody tears their ACL or they rupture their Achilles, and it's a big story because they're gone for 7, 8, 9 months. But it's the rehab, man. It's not being able to play in the games, having to watch your teammates go out to battle. But then you're in the training room every day trying to do walking exercises and weights and trying to build your knee back up. It's got to be very, very frustrating.
Rehab is worse than playing and practicing because, first of all, you're there early in the morning. And when they open up the training room, you should be there, okay? And then, like, when I tore my quadricep tendon, just the all the constant having to do this and that and ice and stem and
No reward, either.
And there's no reward. And you know that somewhere down the road you're going to get healthy, but it's so far away. They told me this injury is going to be 6 to 8 months, and the days just felt so freaking long. Felt like 48-hour days. And I told myself, when I get healthy, please do not let me get injured again. This is worse than playing or practicing.
Yeah, and it just sucks all the way around.
It does.
And you're not in the moment. You're not enjoying the wins. You're not suffering through the losses with your teammates. There's just no carrot out there dangled in front of you to go for.
Yeah, and you're helpless.
Yeah,
I never liked people doing stuff for me. It was just so demoralizing to have people have to pick me up and move me and move my leg. And then my wife at the time, she had to do stuff for me. I was like, oh, gosh, is this going to end?
I do like that in parentheses at the time. All right, Leon is out the door.
Yes, gentlemen.
Now, you're going to be with Daryl Green.
Yes, playing in a golf tournament.
Yeah. So cool, you got that driver ready to go?
A new driver.
Attaboy.
Inside story. I'm ready to go.
All right, man. Have fun.
All right.
I know you'll have stories coming back. Leon Searcy out the door. He'll be playing a little golf with Daryl Green, which is pretty cool. Hayes Carline coming up here in just a second. We'll get the latest. Josh Allen basically is being ruled out for minicamp. We'll get into all that coming up on XL Primetime.
This is XL Primetime on 1010XL, built by Preferred Builders.
Thanks to Preferred Builders. Anytime you're thinking about that next project, get in touch with them. Think about kicking out a wall, expanding your space. They can do it where you can increase the value of your home when it comes to remodels, additions, or a brand new home. PreferredBuildersJax.com.
I just want it to be known that I got Hack off the air, and I can guarantee you, Fran, you would have got it.
Yeah, I got you. But how many names have you given me off the air and you got me once?
Probably 12 that you got and I get one.
All right, 12 that I got and one that I – and I'm kicking myself.
Just,
I didn't.
And two people's say versions the, of right. the same story.
I'm going to say the one that's wrong, and Franny's going to be listening. He's going to say, how could you miss it?
Yeah, well, I was 7, so that's part of the reason.
Jerry Odom. Again.
Jerry
right now, Fred, you might come in here and throw something at you.
Of your skill.
Right. I mean, look.
If you go to the age whenever you get it wrong.
I like to think I know a lot about Gator football as far as the numbers. But you'll get me on stuff on 90 and 91. I was in first grade. I was in Mrs. Brooks' class reading the weekly reader.
See, this is when you go to the age. Right. To defend
yourself. I was drinking milk at nap time when I was 7 years old.
And all the I do think you were probably still having naps at 7.
I was getting after it.
And you were still, many years later, watching DVR recordings of those games.
Many years.
That's
many
true.
Years. Many.
It's fair.
Jamie Richardson.
Jamie, 18.
God.
Say hello to Hayes Carline. He's fresh from practice. He is our intrepid reporter, 1010XL.com, all things Jaguars, including a not a scathing piece, Hayes, but a critical piece on Leonard Fournette that they can log on and check out. And we're just going down memory lane with Gator jersey numbers. Are you in, Hayes? Are you in?
I'm definitely in.
I know you missed Jerry Odom, Hayes. He missed Jerry Odom.
I missed Odom.
Jerry Odom. Jerry Odom, 57?
There you go. There you go.
That's one of the good ones right there. Yes.
I got you.
I tell
Jason
you, it's funny watching Quincy Williams out here. He kind of reminds me of Jerry Odom.
Does he?
Like when Quincy Williams is on the field, he is clearly the smallest guy out there. Like so, if he's good, he's going to be a fan favorite. Everybody's going to love him because just like Jerry Odom, who was an impactful player and stood out for his lack of size.
Well,
fans always love that guy.
Well, we'll stay there. Just, and this is such a small sample size. And we have said, a lot of us have said, wow, a little smaller than I thought. Do you think he will be able to make an impact? And will it be special teams or will it be beyond?
I think he's going to have to prove to them that he can't play the weak side spot before they move on. I mean, I think that would be the best case scenario for them, would be if he's able to step in and give them production right away. I don't know if that's how it will play out. I don't know if he'll be ready to meet that challenge. But I think that's what they'd like to see. I think we'll find out a little bit more next week at mandatory minicamp. The intensity and the focus certainly go up a little bit. I think the coaches reveal a little bit more. The experimentation goes away a little bit more towards getting the team really ready for camp. And in training camp, as Doug has said, OTAs, it's fine. We can experiment and work on versatility in players. But once we get to training camp, we get away from that because, he feels like everybody on the roster should have a chance to earn a starting job. Well, you can't do that if you're bouncing around. So, I think next week will be a really big week for Quincy Williams. But I think ideally, he would be the week one starter. He just has to prove he's up to the task.
Hey, it's Caroline here with us on XL Primetime. Hey, it's the first time I've had a chance to talk with you on air about that piece you wrote earlier in the week about Leonard Fournette. I thought it was really interesting, really insightful, and makes you think. I'll let you explain it. I know you explained it a little bit on the Franzi show, but for the purposes of the midday audience, basically your thoughts are you don't think the Jaguars are going to re-sign Leonard Fournette after his rookie deal, so essentially give Leonard Fournette the ball 800 times over the next 2 years.
Yeah, and I appreciate your comments, Hacker. Yeah, I think that's where it's at. I don't think you draft a running back in the top five, and I think one of the biggest things that you always are mindful of is longevity and preserving that player. I guarantee you the New York Giants have a long-term plan with Saquon Barkley so that he will be a good player, a healthy player, at 29, 30, 31, playing for them. I don't think the Jaguars have to worry about that anymore because of how Leonard Fournette continues to treat his job. And again, yes, these things are voluntary, but when you're in the position Leonard Fournette is in, you should be here. You should not miss five OTAs, not when there's a new offense being installed, not when there's a new quarterback. I mean, John DeFilippo has come out and said he wants to turn the offense over to you. I mean, we know that, and we know what Leonard's told his new running backs coach, Terry Rubisky, of, hey, I want to be a leader on this team. I want to bring a Super Bowl here. I want to be, I don't want to be a piece of the puzzle. I want to be the puzzle. Well, you have to be here to make those things happen. There's only 10 OTAs. Like, I have no problem with Yannick Ngakoue not being here. I have no problem with Jalen Ramsey not being here. But I think voluntary is different for different players. And I think a lot of it depends on how your career is gone. I think for Leonard Fournette, I think he made a huge mistake by missing as many of these voluntary OTA sessions as he's made. When he's here, he's looked good. I still think he has the opportunity to have a big-time season. I think he's a talented player. I think he believes he's on Jalen Ramsey's level, and he's not. But I do think he is talented, and I think the Jaguars would be well-served to, don't worry about mileage on the tires anymore with Leonard Fournette. If you have to give him the ball 380 times this year and 380 times next year, so be it. Because I think at the end, I don't think there's no chance they pick up his fifth year option. So then he's just going to be a free agent, and the next team will have to decide how much he has left.
Hey, do you know those guys over there? So this is my whole point with it: is he had to come to Jesus talk with Tom Coughlin, okay? So I'm sure Tom Coughlin laid it out specifically. This is what we expect from you. All right? And granted, again, they're voluntary, these practices, okay? They're voluntary. But my whole thing is he's breaking kind of the spirit of that talk. Yes, he doesn't have to be here. But the reality is if they told him, we want you invested, okay? Here's how you can earn your money back. We want you invested. He broke the spirit of that already. Already, Hayes. We're a month away or more from training camp, and he's already doing what they're telling him not to do. That to me is like a huge, huge red flag for the coming season.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that's a perfect example and perfect. I think you've laid it out perfectly in terms of where they're at. I mean, this is a player who, again, as a rookie, was basically suspended a game by the team. He was a healthy scratch. Which basically was a suspension. Last year, he gets ejected from a game. He gets suspended for the next game. He He gets reprimanded for his conduct in week 17 in the finale. They void his guaranteed money. I mean, you would think that he would be doing everything he could. I mean, you know, he talked to us a couple weeks ago about clean slate, and, you know, it's unbelievable to me that he would then decide to miss more than half of the OTAs, to attend four and miss five. And obviously there's, you know, one more on the schedule, but I think in the end of it, he's going to end up attending four. I mean, it's just unacceptable. And again, for getting how the team feels about it. I mean, what a missed opportunity for Leonard Fournette when you've had trouble mastering the playbook for your first 2 years, to decide that five practices on the field with a new offensive coordinator and a new quarterback are not going to help you. I don't know how anybody could reach that conclusion.
Yeah, you can help determine your own future, or someone else can decide it for you. And that's kind of at least the road it's going down right now. I'm still going to hold out hope and think positive about what lies ahead. But I agree with the sentiment so far as far as what he's doing. He's sending a pretty bad message right now. All right, Hayes, other thoughts coming out of this Thursday OTA from you?
Yeah, it was an interesting day. I thought we saw another, I think, decent day from Nick Foles. I would rank this one far down on the ones that I've seen, but still sharp for the most part. You can still see the connection to Keelan Cole stood out. They had a nice touchdown connection over the middle, really a nice catch by Keelan Cole. You saw a little bit more, I think, from the defense today. And I'll tell you another guy that's really starting to make a move is receiver CJ Board. He's really started to do some nice things in terms of connecting with Foles. So he'll be one to watch next week in the mandatory minicamp. But it was a good day. I mean, the weather wasn't too bad. It was hot, but not as brutal as it's been. And you know, it was interesting to see the tight ends got a lot of work today. Jeff Swaim was, I thought, pretty effective in red zone work. Josh Oliver had a nice reception once again. So kind of the familiar things that we've seen kind of played out. I just didn't think Foles was maybe as sharp as what we've seen, but still a pretty good day overall.
Hayes, the 2019 OTAs are almost in the books. We have mini camp next week, and then that's it until training camp at the end of July. You've been out there to every practice of OTAs over the last, almost a month now. Final observations from you. This will be the last time we probably talk to you during OTAs. Your overall thoughts on what you witnessed, and do you feel that Fournette, Ramsey, Ngakoue, all the guys that have missed OTAs at certain points, will they all be here next week for mandatory minicamp?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think Leonard will be. I think Jalen will be. I'm not sure if Yannick will be, but my guess is he will, because I think you have to have a pretty united front with your agent to skip the mandatory portion. And Yannick has been in and out during a voluntary session, so my guess is he's probably not at the point where he's going to skip mandatory minicamp. I would do it if I was Yannick Ngakoue. I would not come until I had a second contract with the Jaguars. But I would be a little surprised if he doesn't come, even though I think he certainly has the right to leverage that. But yeah, I think they'll probably have full participation. And if they don't, I think that would be incredibly disappointing. And then I think in terms of where they're at, I think they're in a pretty good place. They're probably a little bit more balanced offensively than what we kind of thought coming in. But it's just hard to judge it because the defense is so limited. And at this time of year, there's no contact. But, I think the receiving depth and talent overall looks better. And Foles has been sharp. So, I mean, if the passing game can just be average, they have a chance to win 10 or 11 games, assuming, you know, the defense is what we think it is and, you know, they can get the ground game going.
Hey, so you are 1010XL's beat guy, and the beat guys are always around every day. They get things. They hear things. They're in the locker room. They talk to players. They talk to the, you know, guys in the locker room that aren't players. So you see things. So these are just practices. They're OTAs. But in this short span, have you seen anything to make you think this team might be better than I originally thought it was going to be 2 months ago?
I think it could be just because of Foles. I just think it makes such a difference. And, you know, he does look a lot better than Blake Bortles. It's just a fact. And I know it's people don't really want to go down that road because they do at least admire how Blake handled himself while he was here. But there's a big difference between the two players. So far, there's a big enough, and I don't know that this will continue, but if it does continue, it's a big enough of a difference where you then have to ask the question, what took so long for them to realize that Blake Bortles wasn't the answer if a player like this was out there the whole time? So, I mean, that's the biggest takeaway, is that if Nick Foles can be, you know, a top 12 quarterback in the league this year, I don't think it's fair to expect that he can be a top five or you know, top seven. I don't think he's that good, and I don't think he's got the weapons around him to really be able to accomplish that. But if Nick Foles can, you know, when you look at quarterback rating and you know, the stats that really matter, and he's hovering around 12, they've got a chance to win 10 or 11 games, I think. So, you know, I need to see a little bit more from the defense. I think the joint practices with Baltimore will be certainly interesting to see how the defense fares against an offense that really they should dominate. You know, so I don't know that we know enough about that. I'm going more off of what they've done in the past than anything else. But if the defense remains, you know, very good to elite, I think Nick Foles does give them the opportunity to get back into the playoffs.
That's what they're pinning their hopes on, that's for sure. All right, Hayes, they can keep up with you on Twitter. They can listen to the Franchise Show this afternoon and then check out everything at 1010XL.com. Thanks, bro.
All right, thank you, guys. Take care.
Hayes Carline down there at OTAs, and they'll have mandatory minicamp next week as we get ready to see what it looks like if all that are expected to show. That's going to be the biggest question mark. Next week, as far as the guys that aren't here now, will they be here next week? And, boy, that Leonard Fournette conversation is just going to keep right on rolling as far as what's going to happen with him when it's all said and done. We head into the 2 o'clock hour, a little more of that conversation. Also, back to the NBA Finals after last night's loss by the Golden State Warriors. Does that mean you'll see KD? We'll tell you what we know next.
This is XL Primetime. Brought to you by Florida Home AC. Now that's cool on 1010XL.
2 o'clock hour, it is here. Hopefully everybody's having a good Thursday out there. Closer to the weekend, that's always good. Closer to the kickoff of the NFL and college football. But we're counting it down to the 100th NFL season, so we'll have a Corona countdown to kickoff highlight coming up in just a little bit. Donna just mentioned in the update the three-point line, which we really didn't talk about very much yesterday. I wonder how much it will change the game of college basketball. They're basically going to the international line. They're moving it back, and we're going to find out whether it's going to affect scoring beyond the three-point line. That's for sure. But how much is it going to affect college scoring? I love the fact that the shot clock has made the game a little faster.
Do you?
And, yeah, I do.
Because it went from 35. I was going to bring that up. It went from 35 to 30. College basketball, to me, was just fine the way it was. They keep messing with it.
Well, I didn't mind it because we still have some of those slow plodding games, but you got to get that shot off. And I thought only 6 seconds past the NBA shot clock, I thought this was going to be really hard. I love it.
Love it.
It moves the game along.
Now, you
love
guys
it.
Are going to have to educate me on this because I'm considerably younger than you two fine gentlemen. So when there wasn't a shot clock, How did that work? That seemed like that would be unbelievably boring.
Well, one of my great memories is Villanova over Georgetown, and it was a slow played game, and that's basically what pushed or forced the shot clock era to begin, because Rolly Massimino and Villanova slow played Georgetown, frustrated them.
Could you literally have the ball for 2 minutes?
Of course.
Yeah. So
3 minutes, Carolina whatever. Was famous for Dean Smith's four corners.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, if you go back to four corners, you want to talk about something that was slow? That was slow.
I mean, that's ludicrous to me. Why it took them so long to put a shot clock in.
They would spread and throw the ball. Four corners.
Four corners.
Yeah.
And then as soon as someone would walk up to you, then the official would start his count, his five count, as far as guarding, and you just pass it to the next guy. That would drive me batty.
I mean, I don't like when they mess with the how long you have to shoot the ball, but you have to have a shot clock. I can't believe how boring that would have been watching basketball without set
shot clock.
That's
how NC State beat Houston, too.
Yeah. And you still see – I always remember compelling basketball. For the most part, there were teams that still wanted – remember, before the shot clock era, you still had teams that pushed it up and down the floor. You still had some great scoring basketball teams.
Great, like the Houston team had Hakeem Olajuwon, Drexler, Michaud, Benny Anders, Andre Franklin. That team was unbelievable in 83. And they lost to NC State because all NC State did was hold the ball. Hold the ball and take wait for the perfect shot.
Yeah, and so I don't know how much the three-point line will change it. Percentages will go down, but it sometimes feels like the three-point shot is looking more and more like a two-point shot because it just seems like it's happening with such a regularity, which is not a bad thing because you sometimes you see a lot of college basketball teams that Florida, for example, Florida's going to live by the three and die by the three because they didn't have any inside presence, so you saw them jacking up more threes. That can be a real ugly game after a while. And then Florida against Michigan found themselves in a position where they had no one that could drive and create in the paint. That's sad as a basketball team, but that's what they were reduced to. They could not drive and finish and make a basket. And so we're going to find this is going to force a little bit more of going out there and trying to recruit a big man and have some presence inside to go along with three-point shooting.
Well, it's like Matt brought up earlier. Now, this is more an NBA topic than college, but the evolution of the three-point shot has really changed the game, and it got me thinking, you know, even go back as recently as 20 years ago, who were the best players in basketball? Well, you had Tim Duncan, you had Shaq, and you had David Robinson, and Patrick Ewing, and Olajuwon, and all these big, gargantuan men. And, yeah, and I mean, obviously you had some guys, Jordan, without saying, but there was a lot of big guys. If I were to ask you right now, who are the top five centers in the NBA, you might have a tough time. It's all about shooting the ball. It's all about the perimeter guys.
Here's what's funny. Joel Embiid is a dominant center, yet likes to go out beyond the three-point line.
Yeah.
And in fact, probably finds himself too often out there because they like to run the offense through him, you know, at the high point, you know, as you kind of start the offense. And it drives me a little crazy because as good as he can be when it comes to it's a novelty when you see him hit a three, go inside and work as a center, but it doesn't happen.
Joe, how many fives right now have their back to the basket?
Yeah, I know.
How many?
not nearly as
Jokic,
many.
Jokic, maybe. Yeah. He's more along on the perimeter as well, too, because he can handle.
He's a passer.
He can handle and he can pass. But, I mean, guys that are strictly back to their back to the basket.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, 15 years ago you had power forwards with their back to the basket, centers with their back to the basket. You even had some small forwards who would do a little back-down game. Now it's never, nothing.
Yeah, and so I'm cool with the idea that whether we're talking NBA or college, the ball moves – the flow of the game is faster, the urgency to shoot. Sometimes it can be a really fun watch. Other times you can just see a lot of shots go up that never, you know, they're always hitting iron or whatever. And then really the difference between these last two three-point shooting games between Golden State and Toronto, one was good and one was awful.
If Shaq and Patrick Ewing, Olajuwon too, I mean, I won't put Duncan necessarily in this because Duncan had a little bit of an outside game. Shaq had almost no outside game.
No.
Ewing... Yeah, Ewing had a 15-foot jumper, but he wasn't going much past that. Olajuwon, same thing. If they played today...
Olajuwon was the best of those shooters.
Yeah, he was the best of the shooters.
Away.
But if they played today, would they have had the same career that they had during their day? I mean, has the game changed much?
I don't know, because if they were in the game, would we be seeing these jacked-up threes? Because if you got guys like that with that kind of talent, with your back to the basket, where you know you're getting to, you are getting to, or you're getting fouled, one of those things. Yeah, I think it's not as much of a three-point deal as it is now. I think it's a lot has to do with the fact that kids at a young age over the last 10, 15 years, it's all about the three now.
Yeah, I think Chad or someone was saying earlier, I think it was Chad, just that you know the dunk was the thing and now the three's the thing.
Right.
And because obviously just by height alone, more people can shoot the three than can dunk, and especially as you're coming up. But I always joke, and Coach Damon and some of the guys that were coaching St. Joe's back in the day – when our kids were coming through, is that if you started jacking up too many threes from well beyond the arc, your butt was
going
to the
bench,
okay? And Steph has forced these coaches to at least acknowledge that can happen, and you don't need to be up against the line and have someone on you to be able to hit a shot, but it drives coaches crazy.
Here's the thing. I'd love to hear Matthew Driscoll on this too, by the way. But here's the thing. If you think about it, with two of the greatest players of our time, Jordan and Kobe, when they had to have a basket, those two guys, they backed their guy down and did that little fall away that you absolutely could not stop.
Yeah, yeah.
When they had to have a basket.
And it has to be a guy that could drive you off the ball
right.
and make his shot or go past you and make
right.
his shot.
Right.
For that to work, for the respect level to be there defensively. I love the fact that there are more capable shooters and guys that can hit it. I'm still amazed. Van Bleep, as I like to call him, hit one with two guys on him last night from the edge of the court. That was
falling away.
Yeah, falling away. That was a 35-foot shot. And like, whoa.
Yeah, Toronto.
So awesome.
They were insane last night. Danny Green, my God.
Yeah. And he needed to wake up, too.
Right, he hit six threes. It was ridiculous. Now, I know out of the four of us, Leon was the only guy originally that picked Toronto to win. That's probably because he and I had a bet.
Sure.
I had Golden State. He had the field. But the three of us had Golden State. I still have Golden State. In fact, I don't think Toronto wins another game. Maybe it's foolish thinking, but I think Clay comes back. I think Durant comes back. I think Golden State rights the ship and wins in six. Do you guys, based on what you've seen, are you changing your pick?
Well,
do you think Toronto could win the series?
Yeah, I definitely think they can. And the thing that I like more than anything else, and no, I did not pick them to win. I was picking a seven-game series thinking that it had potential and that Kawhi was kind of the thing I wasn't completely certain about because he's hurting a little bit and didn't really know that these other guys would be able to come up as big as they have. So based on what Siakam has shown us, based on what Lowry has been able to come back and do again, and they did it on the road, and with Danny Green getting his shot back, yeah, I think there's every reason to say Toronto is capable of winning this
it's
series.
It's going seven. I mean, yeah. Golden State's going to have to win in Toronto to win another championship.
Yeah. I get that feeling.
It's
I really
going seven,
do.
Man. I'm telling you right now. I don't know what's going to happen in game four. I still think Toronto can win game four. But they're winning game five. Toronto will win that game. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind about
that. Even with Clay and Durant.
Yes, because to me, and I keep saying this, Durant's been gone for a month.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. I get it. Toronto needs to win, I think, on Friday. Because if they don't win Friday and it's 2-2 going back to Toronto, all the pressure's on them.
Well, they have to win game five.
Of course.
But just think about it, okay? Think of the pressure that's on Golden State right now to not leave Oakland without a win. It's a tremendous amount of pressure. This is a team that's been so good in their barn in the postseason, as big as it gets. That matched the largest loss that they've ever had inside Oracle in the postseason. They don't drop too many of them. And just look at the total number of losses that Steve Kerr's had to absorb. Very, very few when it's all said and done, when it all is added up in the postseason. So the pressure is squarely on them. And if they win that game and then you go back to a piece, then Toronto wins that next game. And then all of a sudden, again, advantage Toronto. Golden State's got to prove they can go back to their house and win again. And that's the part that
To me, if Durant doesn't play again, and we're still not sure if he's going to play again. And without Durant, those two teams, Golden State's not a better team. They're even. That's pretty much a wash, those two teams. Without Durant. And that's why, to me, I think, because we don't know if Durant's playing. I still don't think he's going to play. I think this thing's going seven. I absolutely think it is.
And just the simple fact that Steph Curry did as much as he did and there weren't any other guys right there with him. And the numbers, as we said, there are only a handful of guys that have been able to hit that many shots, score that many points in terms of the team's total, and none of them have been able to come up winners. 43% or more of a team's points in a finals game, you're gonna come up empty. You're gonna lose that game. I'm just looking to see who the other ones were as far as the numbers are concerned. We're talking big performances, but it never really added up to a W.
How much more money did Klay Thompson earn himself last night by not being in there?
Yeah, maybe.
You know, if you're Golden State, you're going to throw all the dollars you can at Klay Thompson now because without Klay Thompson, because every figure is Kevin Durant's gone. If you lose Klay, like Leon was talking about earlier, Golden State might have been exposed last night without Klay Thompson.
Yeah, and he's a guy that has gone through his little hot and cold stretches. He really has, and he got really hot before he went down with that injury. So we'll see how he can do it. But the percentage of make and the number of guys that didn't make shots last night, very damning for the Golden State Warriors, that's for sure.
This is XL Primetime on 1010XL, built by Preferred Builders.
19 minutes after the 2 o'clock hour, Tom Terrific says he's not going to trademark Tom Terrific. He says that he wanted, we're talking about Tom Brady, and he attempted to trademark the name Tom Terrific, and fans, former teammates, all sorts of other ones chimed in on whether or not he should be able to do it. Now, he argues that he didn't like the name, but he was trying to basically trademark it and said, quote, it was unfortunate that it looked like he was trying to block Tom Seaver or his family from using the name. Now, you're talking about Tom Seaver back way back in the day, late 60s through the 70s, and imagine that phrase drawing the ire of another big-time star like a Hall of Famer in Tom Seaver, and it bringing up a little bit of a negative storyline for one Tom Terrific.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of negative storylines
involving
Tom Terrific, that's for sure. I asked you guys this earlier. Probably shouldn't. Should have saved it for the radio. Just to kind of let the cat out of the bag, but I'll always mention it here. I'm a big fan of the show Pawn Stars on the History Channel. I don't know if you know this, Matt, but I minored in history at the University of North Florida.
Good for you.
Very exciting about that.
Love like history.
And especially today being the anniversary, 75 years since D-Day. Really do enjoy history. But I like Pawn Stars for numerous reasons, one of which is all the stories that come in with all these items. But last night, or I guess it aired Monday night, was a sports episode, kind of. So the guy that owns Pawn Stars, Rick, goes to Philadelphia to a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar auction. But he got to look at the items of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar before the auction. And the auction was to raise money for the Skyhook fund. That's Kareem's charity that he does there in the, I guess, the Philadelphia area. So anyway, long story short, all these items for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. A pair of his used goggles from, I assume, the late 70s, early 80s. Kareem said he only wore 3 pair of goggles in his career. I find that hard to believe.
Really?
That's kind of gross. But yeah, he said he only wore 3 pair of goggles.
He might have just kept changing the straps on them.
Well, here's a trivia question. This is according to
Kareem. I hope he changed the straps on
them. Why did he wear goggles in the first place? Do you know the answer?
No.
It was not a vision thing.
Yeah, I just thought it was protecting the eyes.
Yeah, I thought he had a scratched cornea.
And the reason why? All the centers in his day were like 6'8". Mm-hmm. And he was like 7'2". So when people tried to defend him, they'd be coming from south to north. He kept getting poked in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, well, I got to stop this. I'm going to put the goggles on.
Right.
Pawn Star guy Rick paid $25,000 for a pair of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's goggles. That is just insane money to me.
Yeah, it is.
But some of the other auction items, he had the Kareem's 88 Laker championship ring. That was going for over $300,000.
Wow.
A game-worn All-Star jersey for Kareem was going for upwards of $175,000. Why on planet Earth would you pay $175,000 for a sweaty, disgusting
game? Well, it's not sweaty anymore.
No,
but
it hasn't been washed.
Yeah.
Well, they talked about it.
Yeah.
It's framed and it's like dirty. It's like sweat stains on the jersey.
Well, the game worn is about as authentic as it gets, and I look.
Take some Tide to that thing before I buy it, man.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't if it's game worn. I wouldn't want to wash it. It's like the I always call it the Braveheart jersey of Timmy Tebow against Florida State. You don't want to wash that if you had the game worn. But it's the amount of money that they're paying for some of these things is a little crazy. And if you take an NBA championship ring, what are you going to do with it? Where are you going to you're going to wear that out to the club?
Yeah, I mean, I literally wouldn't pay $5 for any memorabilia.
Well, but we're in the sports world, so we always have to remind ourselves of that.
No, but even if I wasn't, I wouldn't. I just don't get the. I think it's cool. Mm-hmm. I like to look at it. By the way,
mm-hmm.
I think it's really cool. I just don't know that I would spend any money on something like, okay, yeah, this is what this guy wore. Or this is what this guy did. How much you want to give me for it? I mean, wait, real quick. Riley Cooper's a freshman.
Well, he was 14, but I don't know what his number was as a freshman.
Well, you're wrong there, too. He was 11. So you're wrong there.
Oh, he was 11.
Another
was 14,
one I got
he was
you on.
Philadelphia.
Another one. All right.
They're still, listen, you just keep testing him. He's going to start to fold
well,
up.
Well, I mean, look, he's gotten me 3 times. He's asked me 50 names.
Yeah.
We're not talking about the 47 I've gotten
well, actually,
right.
Well, actually, both of you have banged out a lot of good correct answers.
Yeah, but he was 14 in Philly.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, all right, Joe, you're a good example. You're a Dodger fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying you would pay 25 grand, nor would I expect you to. But if I give you the option of buying the Kirk Gibson home run ball in 1988, what would you spend on that?
Oh, I really, it's like I said, it's just so hard for us, I believe, to put any amount of money on these things. A, we're not as rich as the people that are, you know, that are buying these things. And I would pay $1,000 for a Dodger relic, if it's the bat, if it's the ball, something like that. I could see myself, and especially if it goes to charity. That's also one of the main things that happens here.
Yeah, I would.
We
got to
remind
yes,
ourselves
yes.
of this. That like
you would just pay $1,000 to put it in your man cave.
No, like I've got so many cool things in the sports lounge. I mean, I've got some really cool things, but most of the money that goes to these are for charity. So I got to. You always have to remind ourselves.
Right.
The $300,000 maybe for the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar ring.
That's
I'm guessing
true.
Might have gone to charity.
Well, the most expensive piece of sports memorabilia, and it was a baseball card. Mm-hmm. Do you know the Honus Wagner card, mm-hmm. which sold at auction, I guess 10 years ago now or whatever it was? Do you know how much it went for?
No, in the millions.
It did. And the reason I know it, they brought it up on the show.
Yeah. $7
million. $3.14 million.
Yeah. I knew it was in the millions, just to know how much.
And the story behind it was they were releasing this card in packs of cigarettes back in the day because the cigarette company thought it was a smart idea to attract young people to buy cigarettes by putting baseball cards in. And
bubblegum, cigarettes, come on, it's all the same thing. Come on, kids.
My question is, why did Kareem give up the ring? That's my question.
Well, Honus Wagner.
That's the bigger story, right?
Well, Wagner didn't like the fact that his baseball card was in cigarettes, so he told him to take it out. So of the 500 or so cards that they made, 450 were discontinued. Only 50 got released into circulation.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that card is the most valuable piece of sports memorabilia out there.
Yeah, and some of these big moments in sports, you would think that they would draw more money, and oddly enough, some of them have it. And I think whenever the single-season home run record was up for grabs and McGuire did it, someone paid just gobs and gobs of money.
Right.
And then Barry Bonds came back a little bit later on and beat it.
Cheater.
And then they didn't want to – they didn't want to bid on that one. And they thought that they were going to be able to get in that million-dollar range, and they weren't able to do it. And so it's funny how it goes. Some items are you can't pay enough, you can't bid enough to be able to win it over somebody else, and then other ones you're like, that's it, that's all it got.
What do you think is your most valuable piece of sports memorabilia if you were to go to a pawn shop or whatever?
I love this piece, and it is not the record setter, but I love this piece. Tiger Woods won his 72nd PGA Tour title at Jack's Place and matched Jack with 72 wins. Both signatures are on the memorial flag.
Ooh.
I love it.
Yeah, that beats me.
I love it.
So I got a football signed by Bowden and Spurrier, but you got me beat.
Yeah, and I've got a Spurrier ball. I've got a Bowden helmet. I've got a Bowden helmet that has Chris Winkie, Charlie Ward. I think that's it.
Does it say two Joe C?
Yeah. Yeah. No. But they did it, you know.
I got nothing.
Yeah, and then I'm dead serious. I got lucky in that sense. And there's one really cool piece of all the players from the Players Championship. Nice big piece,
right?
That I love. It's got all the signatures on it. It's pretty cool. Got the island green and all that kind of stuff. And my buddy Martin from Palm Beach Autographs framed that bad boy up and made it look really.
I'm feeling left out here, man. Like I should have something.
Well, but you've been around. It's so funny because you know we're not. None of us are really chasing autographs.
Still have cool memorabilia.
It's, it's nice to have a few of those pieces. And most of them I've been able to go through Palm Beach Autographs to get. Like Martin will try and get me signatures for, like I got a Miami Dolphins helmet that's got Jim Kick and Mercury Morris on it. You know, that type of stuff.
I do have a piece of memorabilia, actually. Yeah. I do. I have a Coke bottle. From Florida's first 1984. Yeah. I was in school.
I have those.
I kept it, and I've kept it all along. In fact, when we moved, the last time we moved, my wife was like, you still have that? I'm not letting go of that thing, man. I am not letting go.
I have one of those, which is pretty neat. I mentioned the Patriots at Tom Terrific. Just one thing that just to think about with the Patriots as the mini camps are going on around the National Football League, it's still bloated.
This is XL Primetime. Brought to you by Florida Home AC. Now that's cool on 1010XL.
So touching on the Patriots with one of the mini camps going on this week, do that just a second. But we were talking about some of the memorabilia and the price tags and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know exactly what the – remember me talking to you guys about the Jack Nicklaus Rolex watch that he's putting up for auction?
Yeah.
And it benefits the Nicklaus Children's Healthcare Foundation. And this is a Rolex that he's had on 12 of his major championships. According to a report, a watch that was owned by Paul Newman sold in 2017 for millions of dollars. Just guess how much.
A watch owned by Paul Newman.
Paul Newman, a Rolex.
That'd be a good one, man.
I'll say $7.82 million.
I'm going to say more than that. I'm going to say like double digit. 11, 12?
17.7.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Why would anybody do that?
But
I bet it's a great Rolex, but it's also Paul Newman.
Man. Yeah, and really, I love Paul Newman. One of my favorites of all time.
Yeah, me
but
too.
The only thing I could say is that this money has to that amount of money has to be going to charity,
right?
Just so you could put it somewhere and say that's Paul.
Well, Newman. Well, I almost think Rolex. Like the Pawn Stars show could be fake because like he got the everlasting gobstopper from Willy Wonka.
You almost think it could.
Yeah,
be
Yeah, I mean, but. What, I mean, now, you've seen Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
What do you think he had to pay for the movie prop, the everlasting gobstopper, from Gene Wilder and Willy Wonka?
I don't even
– He got that, and he got one of the Wonka bars that were wooden props in the movie.
Right.
He paid $125,000.
Yeah, and you know what?
For the everlasting gobstopper.
And when you say fake, you mean that they might inflate
they might
some of the numbers?
They might embellish a little bit. Why would anybody pay that?
I don't know, but I do think that –
How could you possibly make your money back?
I don't think they ever plan to. I really don't. Some of them actually, in the whole idea of Pawn Stars, they are trying to make their money back.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So
but average Joe going to walk into that Las Vegas pawn shop and say, there's the everlasting gobstopper from Willy Wonka. I'm going to pay over $125,000 for that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I just don't believe anybody's going to do that.
No, really, really is hard to believe. All right. So the Patriots are one of, 9 teams mandatory minicamps this week? And if you think about it, everyone else is out there searching for what they already have, which is Super Bowl titles. They are the winners. Everyone else is looking up to them. But just think about the fact that of all the teams that are out there right now, every other one didn't make it to the postseason, and the New England Patriots did. So there are 9 of them. 8 of them haven't. And the at least as far as one of the predictions are concerned, the Browns are the hottest team right now that everyone's predicting to make it to the postseason. But if you think about what the Patriots have done, and this is what we all have to live with, 10 straight division titles. It's the longest streak in NFL history. 16 straight 10-win seasons. That is tied for the longest streak in NFL history. Who else would have that?
16 straight
10-win seasons. They have 8 straight conference championship appearances.
It's ridiculous.
3 straight Super Bowl appearances, which is tied for the second longest streak in NFL history.
Wait, but go back for a second. They've won 10 games or more 16 straight years?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's got to be a record by a long way in that league.
It's tied.
Tied?
Yeah, who else has it?
Oh, I didn't know you were saying that. Tied?
Yeah, 16 straight 10-win seasons tied for the longest streak in NFL history.
It's got to be pre-modern era then. It's got to be like...
No, I'm not.
It's either the Steelers or the 49ers.
No, it's the Packers or the Colts.
It's the 49ers.
Yeah, it's the 49ers.
From 83 to 98.
Yeah, wow.
They won
that's
16.
That's just rare.
16
air.
Straight division titles?
16 straight 10-win seasons.
Okay.
And
the Patriots won 11-5 the year Brady got hurt.
Yeah.
With Matt Castle, they didn't even make the playoffs.
Right, because it was – okay, I was thinking there was a 10-win season that didn't make the postseason.
11-5, they did not make the playoffs.
So there have been some of those. So 16 straight 10-win doesn't always guarantee that you're making it to the postseason, but that's what the 49ers did.
I mean, here we are on June 6th.
Wow.
Is anybody going to unthrone them in the AFC East right now?
Oh, no, not in the East.
I don't think so. Now, granted, and I always drink the Kool-Aid every year, and I shouldn't. Buffalo got better this offseason. Now, I'm not
picking.
They added a lot of talent.
Okay, remember, though, they were a playoff team just like Jacksonville. They didn't win a playoff game, but they ended the longest playoff drought in the 21st century. And then they went right back to whatever, below average. And so they got better, but you got to remember what they were and how much better are they going to be. And they still are trying to prove that they can get the quarterback that can keep them going, you know, for the long term.
Some people will tell
you. Josh Allen, who the heck knows, man?
I mean, look, the Patriots are great, but I would actually be one of the guys to tell you that the reason they've been able to win 16 straight years, 10 wins or more, has a lot to do with how awful that division is.
Oh, it's
that division's terrible.
It's helped a great deal because between the Jets, the Dolphins for a while were going because the Dolphins only a couple years removed from being a playoff team. But yeah, Buffalo hadn't done a whole heck of a lot until that one mini run that they had a couple of seasons ago. So when you think of the numbers, and of course Brady going into his 20th season at 42 years of age, just something else. It really is. All right, we'll get close to wrapping ours up and then saying hello to the Frangie Show coming up right here on XL Primetime.
This is XL Primetime, brought to you by Florida Home AC. Now that's cool on 1010XL.
Before we are done, let's go back down memory lane. The Corona countdown to kickoff. Don't forget, let yourself summer with Corona, cold Corona or Corona Premier. We go back in time. We're still in the 90s. We at 93, does that sound right? Or 92 days until the 100th. NFL season. We stay in the decade of the 70s, and this is one that, well, you could probably see in your mind as soon as you hear the highlight.
Bradshaw is deep, and they're firing downfield. Swan going after covered, and it's juggled. Swan catches another circus catch inside the Dallas 45-yard line. Gets up and goes inside the 40, down to the 37-yard line. Had a defensive player right on his back. It's Mark Washington. The ball bounced into the air. Swan lying on his back, cut the ball in circus fashion, got up and ran again, went down inside the 40, down to the 38-yard line. A sensational catch for the Steelers, Lynn Swan.
And how about that? That's two sensational catches in this ball game by a leaping Lynn Swan, the guy who was put out of the Oakland Raiders playoff game with the concussion when they played the bongo drums on his head. There were thoughts that he would be, well, he might hear footsteps today. He's been great.
When they played the bongo drums on his head, said Myron
Coe. That's awesome.
Such good stuff. And what's great is that was
so good.
The Steelers were at their own 6-yard line. Bradshaw's feet are on the goal line when he hoists this one, and it's a plus half a football field play. That was a pretty good toss for Bradshaw, and then they get inside the enemy territory, I think at like somewhere around the 40-yard line. So it was a great one. And
you don't have a pair of Hall of Fame wide receivers on the same roster very often with Stallworth and Swan.
And especially a team that ran the ball as much as they did, and yet those two guys, even though their overall yardage statistics are not great, they still made some great plays. But Swan, this game was played out in the San Fran area from Sarah High in San Mateo, where Barry Bonds and Tom Brady followed him. So that's a pretty good group of high schoolers right there. That's for sure when you think about it. We're going to go a little early to this.
Yeah, I can already tell you I'm going to get upset. I know Matt's going to do, and it's not fair.
Just calm down. Here it is.
Now, the 2-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
At Moe's, our caterings have you covered from head to toe and especially stomach. Order your office event or tailgate catering today online at moescateringfl.com.
All right, Frank, we're playing the jersey number game. Been doing it every break. Gator jersey numbers.
Okay.
Now, I've said that you're the encyclopedia of this.
Okay.
So I've gotten 75 numbers right that Matt Hayes has asked me.
Yeah.
The 3 or 4 that I've missed are the ones he's gone on air with.
Okay. 10 or 12, come on.
Okay.
The 10 or 12.
All right.
Have you ever heard of Eddie Haupt? H-O-P-T?
H-A-U-P.
H-A-U-P-T. I have heard of him, but I don't. But I got nothing.
Right.
Eddie Haupt.
Yeah, he's getting me these kind
of
guys.
You ever heard of this guy?
Listen.
Have you heard of this guy? Jerry Odom.
I missed Jerry Odom.
Didn't get him.
I missed Jerry Odom.
57. What number did you give?
I gave 34. I don't know why. I think he was 34 maybe in the arena league.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You went somewhere that was not in a Gator uni.
Yeah, I missed Jerry Odom. That was not a good moment.
Maybe played for the Orlando team, fullback and linebacker.
Yeah.
I got your back, Hacker.
Yeah, he was 34 of their Predators. Yeah,
we knew that you would back him up because you guys have that.
Which other one did he miss? Give me another one he missed.
Kindred spirit there.
Tyrone Baker.
Ooh, see what I mean?
I missed up Frange on this.
Yeah, 20?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Wow. Okay.
Very good. Very good.
20, Joe.
Ian Skinner.
Ian Skinner?
Yeah, got no idea.
No, I know who Ian Skinner is. I'm Nafees Kareem, if you want to go that route.
Can I go 93 and 8?
Well, please. Yeah, he was 8. Nafees Kareem was 8.
Is he 8 or 9?
Yeah, he was 8.
No, I went Ian Scott, 93. My bad.
Ian Skinner, the wide receiver.
Oh, I don't remember him.
One.
I don't remember him.
Yeah, Nafees Kareem was 8.
8.
Because I remember when Rex
through all this, hey, Matt impressed me because I knew you knew it.
He didn't get Steve Shipp,
by
the way.
You guys went back and forth.
Steve Shipp.
And Denmark.
Number 6 in your program? Number 1 in your heart?
And like, whenever Hacker would get one wrong, you go like, I was 4. Okay. Denmark wasn't even born. He wasn't even thought of as a parent.
And then, of course, Steve Shipp.
Yeah. And of course,
I'll bring Steve Shipp till the cows come home.
Man, I know
Steve
he had the biggest bust in Gator history. But
he got Tony McCoy, and he said, well, I was 7 then.
Tony McCoy?
Yeah.
71?
I got 71. Darren Mickle?
Darren Mickle, 92.
92.
Could have been a better player, Frank, right? Could have been a better player.
Tim Polk?
Tim Polk would be 99.
99.
Yeah, you're not going to get him on that.
I mean, you better dig a little deeper,
bro. That ain't happening.
I'm a little embarrassed that that's what the questions
were. Carroll,
I can ask you players, but I don't know the numbers. So.
Bo Carroll?
No, you know it.
It doesn't do any good. Bo
Carroll. Number 2.
All right.
Okay, there you go.
Bring that in here.
Yeah. Y'all got, my phone never rang.
Don't bring that.
I wanted to come.
We were talking.
I couldn't get a call on this show.
He's showing off now. Yeah, the Frank's here. He's showing off for him. Don't bring that trash.
Corey Yarbrough. Corey Yarbrough.
70.
No, you're way off. And he's a McClinney kid too.
Come on.
Am I thinking of Ryan? I'm thinking of Ryan Yarbrough.
What's Corey Yarbrough?
Corey Yarbrough. 62. Big guard. Oh. Tough guy.
62.
All right. Well, I'll get Kenyatta Walker.
Oh, I like
78.
Like
Reggie Green.
78.
Yeah, all right, very good.
I like the beauty is Hayes is kind of like me, kind of condescending when you answer it. I love that. That's the way to do it.
78.
There you go. Hey, no, but this is fantastic.
Yeah, I know you'd love it.
Would you mind, guys, staying around for the next hour? I'll tell Carline and Brooks to take an hour off. We'll go all night.
Best one. Here's my favorite player, right. Other than Bates, my favorite player of Florida. Other than Bates and Danny Wonderful, Donnie Young.
He's 75. Donnie Young had a cup of coffee here in Jackson.
Donnie Young went hard. He went strong. Jeff Mitchell came in with Donnie Young?
71?
71. Okay, that's not bad. Okay, sorry, Hack. Hack, I had your back. When you said Donnie Young, Jeff Mitchell came out. I wasn't trying. It came out. Can't blame me for that.
Hayes Carline was on the phone with us, and he was ready to jump in.
Did he know something? Okay.
So I'm sure you guys will add this to the show. What else is coming up?
Oh, you know what? First of all, I'm scrapping everything else that's coming up. We're doing numbers for 4 hours, okay? Yeah. We're doing Gators, Knoll. We're doing Washington Huskies. We're doing all numbers.
Yeah. You can do baseball. Yeah, I can do.
You know me. I'm weird that way. I'm kind of sick.
Napoleon McCallum. Napoleon McCallum.
34?
No. 5.
He was 5 at Washington. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I didn't know. I didn't really know Washington Huskies.
He was going Washington Huskies.
Okay. Marone, by the way, raving about the OTAs. We get ready. Terrell Pryor, you guys out? Hack, were you out? You've been out most of
I've been out, yeah.
Best practice Terrell Pryor's had.
Yeah.
Terrell Pryor looks like a really good NFL receiver. He looks
like a man among boys.
Yes, he
out
does.
There,
he
man.
Does.
Well, he's had, 25 pounds on everybody else.
Let me ask you, Hacker, you know this better than all of us. The NBA thing, is it just because the Warriors are too hurt? Are they just too hurt, or are the Raptors better than we all thought they were?
The Raptors are better than I thought, Frank. I do think if Klay Thompson and Durant and their Golden State wins, I still think Golden State wins the series. But they better win tomorrow night.
What do y'all think? All
5 Raptors scored in double digits.
Yeah,
that stuff doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that is the deal right there. More guys contributed more points, and they came up big.
Joe, did you know who Siakam or Van Fleet were before the series?
Van Bleep, I call him.
Did you know that? Okay. Did y'all know?
Yeah,
who they
were?
I don't follow it. I didn't know either one of them.
We knew.
I knew Siakam because he killed the
I'm telling on myself here. I had no idea.
Yeah, definitely knew Siakam, but Van Bleep came out of nowhere.
We'll talk Jack. We'll talk that. We'll talk a little hardball. All coming up on the program.
All right, Frank.
Frangie Show coming up at the top of the hour. Fun stuff. I'm just telling you right now, a couple of cases of Corona or whatever, and we can keep this thing going.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Cooper Carlisle.
So we can keep it going. Cooper Carlisle.
Cooper Carlisle. Just, you're 70.
Bro.
Was he 70?
Like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 4-year starter, man. Don't give me that
Cooper
Carlisle. And he
went to Denver. I get it. Right. But 70.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was he asking Joe? Let's get Joe in on
this. Hey, listen, I told you. The only number I will count will be the caps that come off the bottles. That's the only number I'll count. All right, E.T., give us the Twitter poll. Give us those numbers.
Today's Twitter poll question is brought to you by Beaver Toyota of St. Augustine. If Toronto wins the championship, will Kawhi Leonard stay in Toronto? Yes or no? 44% of the votes right now says yes. 56% of the vote says no.
Wow, split pretty evenly,
which is
surprising.
And you know what? I bet it's somewhere in his mind about that number, trying to figure out, should I stay, should I go, which is one of the great songs from the Clash way back in the day. All right, we are out of here. Thanks to Preferred Builders. Log on and check them out, preferredbuildersjax.com, for any of your home improvement needs. If you want to really make a statement, you can do it, either the front, the back of your house, remodels, additions, whatever it might be, preferredbuildersjax.com. Joe C., Ryan the Hacker Green, Matty Hayes with Leon Searcy off tomorrow. We'll be back with you. Good job, E.T. Are you rolling with us tomorrow?
I'm rolling with y'all tomorrow.
Nice. All right, so E.T. and the interns, that sounds like a kind of an indie rock band. We will have them in tomorrow right here on XL Prime.
XL Prime Time out the door, guys. Have a great afternoon. Don't go anywhere. Frank Frangie, Hayes Carline, and Lauren Brooks, The Frangie Show, is coming up next.